Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, April Fool's, 2017. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Square. Accept every card for the same rate and deposit your money fast with free chargeback protection. No commitment, no hidden fees. Sign up now to get free processing on your first $500 in sales at square.com/tech guy. Some terms apply. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, it's that time again. Talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. And I will make a promise to you today that I will not fool you. There will be no April fooling today. This is April 1st. And of course, this must be celebrated internationally, right? April Fool's Day worldwide. They might have different names for it. But I think this is a day we prank each other. Certainly the internet is full of pranks. And frankly, for a tech journalist, is problematic because you just never know what you're reading, if it's true or not. And some of the most annoying pranks are credible. You know, Google buys Tesla, that kind of thing. No, they didn't. But that kind of thing. And then you have to, you know, remember it's April 1st. Sometimes people will, you know, telegraph it, sign the article, as my friend John C. Dvorak does, slurp-a-loof. but sometimes they don't. The meanest ones don't. So beware about what you read this weekend. Google has some funny ones as usual. They brought back the Pac-Man map on Google Maps. That was a prank from a couple of years ago. And now, but they updated it. It's now Ms. Pac-Man. So if you find the right spot, actually, I guess it's on every spot. You can play Pac-Man on the streets of your city. Ms. Pac-Man. That's cute. See, that's harmless. I don't mind that. They also, Google also has a video for a new product they call Google Gnome, G-N-O-M-E. And it's, as with, you know, a lot of these videos, so well done, it might fool you.
Okay, Google, stream Stranger Things from Netflix to my TV.
Okay, Stranger Things from Netflix, playing on TV.
From the people that brought you Google Home comes the next evolution of the smart home. And it's just outside your window. Me, Google Gnome.
And it's a little gnome-like device.
Hey, how can I help?
That you can talk
to. Okay, Gnome, what's the weather like outside?
The weather outside is sunny and 76 degrees.
He's right.
That's where it starts. You go, he's right. Okay, now I'm thinking this is a joke. if the red hat and the blue suit didn't fool you. Google Gnome, I think that's a pretty good one. They also have, you know, it's funny because Google spends so much time and energy on their April Fool's pranks. Sometimes you worry that maybe they aren't focusing as much as they ought to on the job at hand because they must prepare these months ahead of time. You feel like for the first 3 months of the year, all Google's doing is getting ready for April 1st. They have Chromebook accessories, Google Cardboard for the Chromebook, which has got, you know, it's giant because it has to fit on a laptop. Yeah. And then they have a selfie stick for your convertible Chromebook. It don't have to be a pretty hefty stick to hold a laptop out at arm's length. And you can also apparently tell Google Assistant that you don't want any April Fool's jokes on your Google Assistant by saying April Foolproof. Wait a minute. Really? Could that be? I wonder if that works. I wish we could do that to the whole internet. April Foolproof. Let me see here. April Foolproof.
Good morning. Before you start your day, be sure to double check your shampoo. It's a magnet for April Fool's pranks.
Uh-huh. That's good. Some tips on what to do. And then there's a button at Google Assistant after warning me not to, you know, to double check my shampoo, which I forgot to do. But fortunately, our teenager doesn't get up before we do. Then there's a button that says, what can you do?
There are lots of things I can help you with.
Oh, that's just the regular what can you do.
Things like.
Yeah, I don't care. April foolproof. That's a good. And then there's a variety of them, I gather. And then Google has also apparently, if you use Google Maps and you look at Mars, Google has apparently planted a data center on Mars with lots of solar panels, which would make sense. Keep it powered all year round. They say it was a 20% project. I think this is why we have so many April Fool's jokes from Google. They encourage their employees to take 20% of their time, one-fifth of their time, one day a week, working on outside projects that could conceivably become, you know, useful for Google. Gmail was one of those, I believe. That turned out okay. So they say this is one of their 20% projects to open a data center on the surface of the red planet. okay. Google Wind? No, sorry, I wasn't talking to you. Now that I've woken up my Google assistant, she wants to help. Google Wind to shoo away clouds from raining on Western Europe's parade. The local team in Netherlands invented Google Wind, a series of machine learning windmills that can blow away cloudy skies for another day. That sounds like a good idea. A Google Bubble Wrap keyboard. This is from Google Japan. Poochie Poochie in Japanese. That's a good name for bubble wrap. Poochie Poochie. It lets you type on the bubble wrap for letters. Google Play for pets. That's Google. That's just Google. What have you seen? In T-Mobile has the T-Mobile onesie playing off their T-Mobile One package. A onesie with built-in smart fabric. Not real. Not real. It's April Fool's. Although Microsoft apparently had a Microsoft onesie a couple months earlier. But you can buy the T-Mobile onesie. It's $40. Hulu announced an April Fool's gimmick. Who? Which is TV abbreviated, cuts down all its shows to 8 seconds to better match your shortened attention span. Now, again, that I would buy. Not Hulu, who? Just who? H-U. Well, we can go on and on. Share yours with me if you get an interesting April Fool's joke today. 8888 Ask Leo, the website, techguylabs.com. And more serious news, Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon say, don't worry about internet privacy rules. Congress, you remember last week, voted to curtail the FCC's privacy rules, preventing internet service providers from selling your data to the highest bidder without your permission. That's all legal now. But don't worry about it, says Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon. We would never spy on you. Comcast says, we do not sell our broadband customers individual web browsing history. We wouldn't do that. Verizon says, we don't sell personal browsing history of our customers. We don't do it, and that's the bottom line. Of course, you know, they got a short memory, because wasn't it Verizon who got in trouble a couple of years back? Because every single person with a Verizon phone was broadcasting an identifying cookie to every site they visited that said, this is who you are. We have all your information because you're a Verizon customer, name, address, phone number, credit card numbers. And then they did offer that information to the websites. Hey, if you want to associate, if you want to know this person visiting, if you want to know who that is, we'll be glad to sell you that information. So Verizon, you did it once before. You're saying you're not. We would never do that. We don't do it, says Verizon. And that's the bottom line. That's a quote. Maybe that's an April Fool's joke. I wish it were. The president still hasn't signed that law, which would not only, by the way, overturn privacy regulations on internet service providers, but would prevent the FCC from ever again doing it. The law literally is Congress telling the FCC, and no more of that. No more of those rules for consumers. That's a bad idea. Saw a big full-page ad saying, President Trump, last chance to show that you are for the consumers and not for the big telecom companies that spent so much money on Congress, paid so much money to Congress members to get them to pass this, you still have the chance to veto it. The White House has already said, we're not going to veto that. We would never sell your information. It would be a terrible thing. 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Let's talk high tech. Your phone calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO on April Fool's 2017. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Heather Hammon, you're not going to let any of those foolers come on the air, are you?
I hope not.
You better not.
Everybody seems really clean, but I, you know, who knows?
You never know, right?
Worst things have happened. They've been on some horrible dates.
I shouldn't. No, never date on April Fool's. That's a big mistake. Big mistake. Always swipe left on April Fool's. Who should I start with here?
Jeff in Valley Village is up to some spring cleaning, it looks like, getting rid of some old computers.
Cool. Thank you, Heather. By the way, you look lovely today.
Thank you. So do you.
For April Fool's. You can't see me, so you don't know. It's radio. But I can see you. And you decided to really to go all out with the spring look. I like it.
Thanks. Spring. The weather's nice, too.
It's so beautiful, yeah. Hey, Jeff, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Had a question. Speaking of privacy and personal information, as you just were, I have several Windows laptops that I've accumulated over the years and used, kind of transitioned to Mac over time, and I'd like to sell, I'm looking to sell these older Windows laptops. They're all within, like, the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
My question is regarding our personal information and the data that's on there. Some people have said I should sell them, if I'm going to sell them on eBay, to take out the hard drives and just sell them minus a hard drive. Others have said, you know, use a program to wipe it. But if someone really is determined to get your information, they can certainly get it. So I'm just, I am really concerned about our privacy. So I'm kind of leaning towards selling them without the hard drive. But just kind of wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, that would be the most private, would be just to take the hard drive out, that nobody could attempt to get anything off of it. It's my opinion, and I think it's backed by experts, that you don't, if you just use something like Derek's Boot & Nuke, D-Ban, to wipe the drives, what D-Ban does is it not only simply erasing the data or formatting the drive, will not delete the data. So it's important. You know, you don't just do that.
Right.
But if you use a program like D-Ban, what it does is it erases everything, then writes zeros over the entire drive, then erases it again. You can do that more than once. You can do many passes. There's very little evidence that anybody besides, say, the National Security Agency would have the technology to get data that's even overwritten once. You'd have to have some very deep, you know, sensors to probe the magnetic status of the platters. And the guy who's buying that on eBay is not doing that.
Right.
So, I mean, you're right. If you're absolutely paranoid and you really just don't want to even take a chance, take the hard drive out. But in my opinion, D-Ban, and if you're a little paranoid, not a lot, but a little paranoid, use D-Ban and write and overwrite it several times. There's no way in the world anybody's going to get anything off of that.
How much value do you think it would lose by selling them minus the hard drive? I have all the recovery disks on all of them, so I can include that when I sell them, so someone can buy their own hard drive and, you know,
and somebody's bringing up a good point. These are all older things, so they probably don't have solid state drives. They have spinning drives,
yeah,
right? Solid state drives do leak information, even if you D-Ban them, because of the way solid state drives do wear leveling. You can't get to all the cells. You can't effectively erase them. So if it were solid state drives, probably be prudent to take it out. I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on selling on eBay. You know what you could do, I guess, is include a fresh drive, and that would add to the value of it.
Right.
Or, you know, subtract $50 for a new drive for the new person.
And other than eBay, are there any other outlets you suggest for selling? I mean, these are all in really good shape. It's just kind of, I've, you know, outgrown them.
Yeah, I think eBay is probably the best place. If you don't mind you know, putting in the effort to sell it.
Right.
But you're going to get that's where you're going to get the top dollar out of it. And actually, if somebody else has some suggestions, let us know. 8888 Ask Leo or the website, techguylabs.com. Yeah.
Great.
But in my opinion, it's sufficient to do just deban and erase it. Now, here's what you should do going forward. And everybody should do this. Really important, because solid state drives are not as easily erased. They don't, to be honest, even if, you know, you get something off a solid state drive, it's going to be one sector here, one sector there. It's not necessarily going to be, here's all my passwords in a nice big, conveniently easy to read file. It's going to be a little bit of this and that, but that some leakage of data does happen with solid state drives. So my strong suggestion, when you get a new computer, you get a new phone, you get anything with flash memory, is to turn on encryption before you do anything personal at all. On a new phone, for sure, turn on encryption. On an iPhone, it's already built in. But if it's an Android phone, turn on encryption if you're offered that option. And do it before you start downloading your email and personal files. On a new computer, absolutely turn on. And the encryption that's built into the computer systems is fine. Microsoft's BitLocker, File Vault on Apple. The reason being, once you've done that, even though you're on a solid-state drive and you can't erase every sector, if anybody's able to recover a single part of that drive, it's all scrambled anyway. They can't do anything with it. And in fact, you never have to do the secure erase of the drive. You just, you know, the drive without its passcode is worthless. It's just a bunch of gobbledygook. So there's an additional sense of security, because if you lose your laptop or somebody steals your laptop and they have access to the drive, they now can at their leisure, you know, break into it and look at stuff, unless it's encrypted. If it's using strong encryption, you're good. You're golden. And deleting the encryption key is even better than erasing the drive, because once you delete the encryption key, you're just that thing is gobbledygook. It's useless. Now, it is a good point. Somebody's saying an eBay buyer is probably going to want to be able to turn on the computer and have it boot right out of the box. You don't want to face eBay buyers getting upset. So either be very clear the drive has been erased, or I think for top dollar, what you would do is use DBAN. Google this. It's free. DBAN, Derek's Boot and Nuke. Just Google DBAN. You'll find it right away. Run it on the drive, and then reinstall Windows. You said you have all the disks, so in other words, put that computer back to the way it was when you got it. And that's going to, and you can say that, ready to boot, you know, clean install of Windows. That also, that adds value to it. Also, if you're buying a computer on eBay, you would do that yourself. You really don't want to use a used computer's hard drive as if it's your own, because you don't know what's on there. You don't know what's on there. So, I think as a seller, that would be a good thing to do. And probably, I would imagine, worth something. Erase the drive, reinstall Windows, as if, you know, it came just, you know, if you have the recovery disk, that's the best. Then it's like everything as if it came from the factory. It's out of date. You know, it's probably Windows Vista. But that's, you know, they're buying an older computer, and then they can update it if they want. 8888 Ask Leo. If you have another opinion or you have some thoughts, always welcome. You know, your 2 cents. And I know if you can't call, maybe you're doing something, you're driving right now. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. We put all the questions and answers up there. Also, audio and video of the show after the fact. And there's an opportunity on every single segment to add your comments. It's free. It's open to all. We do ask you to sign up, using your Facebook or Google or Twitter if you want to leave comments. That's just to prevent spammers. But otherwise, you don't even have to give us, there's no information exchange. Just go right in there. It's like the old days of the web where you just go to a site and look at it. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Home theater coming up. Yeah, it might be worth me right. If you hate Windows 10, that crowd might say, hey, it's Windows XP. Woohoo! I'm happy. Let me have an old version. It's just I don't know what those lyrics mean, but it does herald the return of our home theater guru. Scott Wilkinson is here, host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast on my podcast network, twit.tv/HTG, and the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum at avsforum.com. And a big story, a breaking story this week, the sentient singing internet. Scott writes, perhaps the biggest discovery of all time was made just last year by Dr. Spanakopita Spanky NR Ganglia of Colossum Corp. U.S. Scott, you're laughing.
Who, me?
Ganglia has developed a remarkable device called the Mindophone, which detects electrical brain activity associated with musical thought and translates it directly into audio signals. That means, I love this, you can now record the music you hear in your head, and it just comes out, and you've got it. Now, that's just where it all begins, because an amazing discovery by Dr. Spanky Ganglia. I'll leave it to you to read the article. avsforum.com.
Exactly. Yeah, you should. It's quite a remarkable discovery.
Oh, Lord.
So, I know you don't like it.
I love those because it's funny and obvious. It's not, you're not trying to trick me. What I hate is, as a tech journalist, your greatest fear is you're going to read one of these stories and report it as gospel.
Yes.
Big news today. Apple just bought Tesla. Yes. And then you're going to repeat, and then people are going to say, you nitwit.
You know, I did that once. I wrote a story about, on April Fool's, about virtual reality, and this was 20 years ago or 30 years ago, virtual reality in a recording studio, and I had an octopus on the drums and stuff like that. And I get a call from Jaron Lanier. Do you remember Jaron Lanier?
He was the king of virtual reality.
And he calls me up and he says, where can I get more information?
Oh, dear.
I had to say, April Fool's.
Oh, he fell for it.
Well, he said, I wasn't quite sure, so I had...
Now, the funny thing is, Jared has just become an anti-tech guy. He wrote a whole book about how gadgets own you, and you got to stop playing with your tech. And
oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, and it's all your fault. I think it was after that April Fool's joke. Yeah, Jared said, that's it. I'm done with the internet.
All right.
So what do you got for us today?
Well, I got a couple of reader questions, listener questions. Stanford Brown wrote in that he just bought a new LG OLED. Which is great. The E6, which is last year's model.
I got the B6, which was also last year's model.
Also last year's model.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Are we missing out having bought the 2016 edition?
Well, no. You're not missing out. It's just that, as you know, with all technology.
That. I hate it when he starts with, it's just that. Okay, what? It's just that what? Okay, what?
Well, as you know better than almost anybody, technology always progresses. It always improves. The companies come bring out a product this year and they say, this is the best thing we've done. And then next year, they do something better.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the nature of the beast, right?
Yeah.
It is. So, yeah, the 2017s have been improved.
But in what way?
Well, for example, one of the complaints about the 2016 OLEDs was how they did something called come out of black. So they do these amazing black levels, better than anything else on the market. They're super black. But then as the picture starts to come out of black, that is, you start getting into the dark shadows and so on, you in the 2016s, under certain circumstances, that can look a little pixelated, a little banded. It doesn't come out of black very nicely.
Yeah.
The 2017s have improved that.
I can live with that.
You can live with that. The colors are still great on your set. Everything is great. It's just that there's a couple of things that and I kind of busted their chops a little bit because last year they said perfect blacks, perfect, you know, this is a perfect display.
And now
this year,
more perfect.
Exactly.
More perfect. Hey.
I don't think people should use the word perfect because there's always going to be an improvement.
Yeah.
From one year to the next.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So,
you can't be a perfect 10 because then how are you going to get better? Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So anyway, this guy, Stanford Brown, bought an E6, which is a somewhat step up from the B6 that you got, and a new Panasonic Ultra HD Blu-ray player and wanted to know whether he should tweak the colors of the TV. You and I have talked a number of times about how you can buy a disc for maybe $20 or so, Spears and Munsell HD Benchmark, Joe Kane's HD Basics DVD Essentials that will help you set up the colors and everything on your TV properly. And he said, will that work? And I said, absolutely, it will work. But it will only do the standard dynamic range, the part of the TV signal that we've been living with for the last decades. And so it will help you set that up. The high dynamic range is what we are waiting for a disc for.
So there's no test disc yet for the HDR.
Correct.
Interesting.
Correct. Okay. And okay. People are working on it. Yeah. There are plenty of people working on it. Joe Kane is working on it. Spears and Munsell are working on it. But they haven't released it yet. So we don't have that yet. So for the moment, when you're using HDR, high dynamic range, you just let the TV do what it does. What, you know, whatever it does, when it receives a high dynamic range signal, it's likely to just automatically go into
its HDR mode. You can't calibrate that in any way.
You can, but it's a little trickier.
So when you guys worked on my TV set, my B6 to calibrate. Mm-hmm. You didn't bother trying to calibrate the HD.
We didn't. No.
Okay.
We didn't. Well, for one thing, here's another improvement in the 2017. In the 2016 OLEDs, the only way you could calibrate it was using a very complicated, laborious process. In the 2017s, they added an option to do it much quicker and easier.
I'm very excited. When I get home tonight, I just got my Blu-ray HDR, my UHD discs of BBC's Planet Earth 2.
Oh, man, this was so awesome.
I'm very excited. This was, of course, shot years ago in 1080p, and it was the demo disc for your new high-def TV and Blu-ray player.
Well, that was the original
plan. Many years ago, but then they realized we better reshoot this all in 4K UHD with HDR. So they did. They went back out, and they shot. And they reshot it. I don't know if it's a new script. Probably is.
It probably is. Yeah. It's the same voiceover, though, David Attenborough.
David Attenborough is doing it. And it just the Blu-ray UHD just came out this week. So I had pre-ordered it because I wanted it.
Yeah.
So it's waiting because I was away for the week. It's waiting for me tonight. This is our date night tonight is going to watch Planet
Man,
Earth.
That's going to look so awesome on that LG OLED. That's really going to look amazing.
So it's the it's the new demo disc for HDR
it
UHD.
Is.
Yeah.
It really is. It really is. And it was shot in high dynamic range.
Yeah, but they should have shot it in 8K. You know, you got to future-proof this stuff. You don't want to go out every 10 years and have to reshoot.
Well, 8K cameras are really rare right now.
I guess. All right.
Yeah. They're just not, you know, you're not going to get, you're not going to be able to buy one easily. Red, I think, is probably almost up to 8K by now. NHK has got some 8K cameras.
The good news is that UHD, you know, for a while, if you bought this 4K UHD set, like our correspondent, you didn't have anything you could play on it, really. And there were a handful of movies. But I think having something like BBC's Planet Earth 2, and it's not expensive. I think it was $30, something like that, for the three-disc set. It really is nice. Now you can show off your new set for people.
Absolutely. And we also got news this week that the first Dolby Vision HDR discs are going to be coming out later this year.
Is this the one I got would be the older version, the HDR10?
HDR10, yeah. I'm sure that's what it is.
Good, because that's all I can play. So.
Exactly.
Scott Wilkinson, find out more on his podcast every week, twit.tv/HTG for home theater geeks, and read his articles, including his very exciting new article about reading the music of the spheres at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't know why I wanted to say AVG. Oh, that was an antivirus many moons ago.
Oh, really?
All right. Now it's time for Scott all by his lonesome with no more Leo. Ooh. Interrupting him, but that's I gotta get you set up with the clock. Go ahead.
Okay, the clock is good.
The clock is
so good. Hey everybody, happy to see you on this Saturday. Mike Mann says that Red pulled out of NAB. Really? I hadn't heard that. They usually have a huge booth at NAB. That's amazing if they pulled out. Red is the maker of digital cinema cameras that are used quite a bit. Peter Jackson used them on The Hobbit. They were used to shoot House of Cards on Netflix. It's quite a nice little digital camera and relatively inexpensive. and they're pushing the boundaries all the time. It's kind of a disruptive kind of company, and they've got a disruptive kind of corporate culture, as far as I can tell. But anyway, I think they might be up to 8K now, or 6K at least. And Leo is exactly right. Shooting at higher resolution than you want to end up with is better than shooting at the resolution you want to end up with. So if BBC had been able to shoot Planet Earth 2 at 8K, that would have been really good. I don't actually know for a fact that they didn't. They might have shot at 6K. Mike Heiss here in the chat room. Hey, Mike. Says that Sony said that the F65, which is their top-of-the-line digital cinema camera, can shoot 4H. I'm not sure I know what you mean by that, Mike. I know it can shoot 4K. It probably can shoot more than that. And we should see more at NAB. Mike Mann says they're going to Red's going to show at CineGear, which is another cinema conference here in LA, and that would be a lot easier for them because they're in LA as well. Hey, Tumbleweeds has a great question here. What resolution can the human eye resolve, and at what resolution is a waste? This is a great question. The human eye can resolve, as I recall, if you have to express it in terms of angles. And the human eye, as far as I know, more or less can resolve one arc second. So you have degrees, and degrees are divided into 60 minutes, and each minute is divided into 60 seconds. And I know that's the same as time, but we're talking about angles here. So one arc second. And so what that really means is a certain dimension, a certain length at a certain distance. So in other words, the farther away something is, the larger that distance is. That's the minimum amount of detail, or the maximum amount of detail, if you want to put it that way, that the human eye can see. If it's up really close, then that distance is really tiny, because you have to have that same angle, whether or not it's close or far away. But that's not the only issue with spatial resolution. Another one is motion. If things are in motion, then things get really blurry and the resolution goes way down unless you do certain things about it. So it's a little tricky.
Here are the stats. And they did shoot Planet Earth 2 on UHD 4K.
They did shoot it at 4K.
Unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. I agree with you. I always recommend shooting or capturing whatever data you're capturing.
Level. Yeah.
Higher than you're going to end up with if you can.
Can you stick around for the top of the hour?
Sure can.
All right. See you then. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was just looking at the stats for BBC's Planet Earth 2. By the way, if you have a 4K TV, you will need that, a 4K UHD TV, if you want to watch it in all its glory. And that won't be, by the way, the streaming version or on BBC America or even on BBC if you're in the UK. You'll have to get the disc because nobody streams in 4K yet. I guess they do, but no, it's not on a stream that you can. It's not with. I don't think Vudu has it or Netflix. Those both stream in 4K. You're going to want to get the UHD disc, and you need a UHD Blu-ray player to play it back. They did shoot it in ultra high definition 4K. That took them 4 years. So they started 4 years ago to make this thing. It was 10 years ago they made the original high-def version. 40 countries. Now, this is the stat that gets me. 400 terabytes of footage recorded. That's how high density, how much data. 42 different camera operators. 2,089 days in the field. 400 terabytes. Recorded for those what will eventually be, or is now, I guess, 6 UHD 4K discs. 8888 ask Leo. Richard on the line from Elk Grove, California. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I was wondering what makes a good Patreon.
A good Patreon. That's a great question. Let me explain what Patreon is first. patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, is a site, a really neat site, which I wish had been around when I first started podcasting. The idea is to be a patron of the arts, to support the arts by donating on a recurring basis, usually a subscription basis, to your favorite artists. So podcasters use it, photographers, authors, people of all kinds use it. And what you do is you reach out to your audience and you say, look, I'd like to, you know, make a living or at least make some of the money back that I'm spending doing this. So here's how you can support me. And there are lots of Patreon causes out there. What makes a good Patreon? I think, of course, something that can generate a large audience, and not, more than just a large audience that's willing to pay. You know, all the stuff I do, for instance, is free. It's ad-supported, including this show. I don't know, not having tried, if I could get anybody to pay money to listen to this show. I'm thinking probably not. It's certainly difficult if you've been giving something away to suddenly say, well, now you've got to pay. The nice thing about Patreon is you can kind of do both. Most Patreon shows are available, a podcast anyway, are available for free, but it's a way of supporting it if you want to. Remember, Patreon takes a cut. You're not going to get all of the money. And what I hear from Patreon artists is that it's easy to overestimate how much you're going to get because you see the total figure, but you forget not only the Patreon cut, but that people do unsubscribe. So people often, mm-hmm. you know, sign up for a Patreon, typically $5 a month. I'm actually a Patreon on a number of projects, including, by the way, a Linux distribution, which is, this is a unique way of getting a Linux distribution supported. The distribution called Entergos, I like it so much, I pay $5 a month to them through Patreon. But what happens is you get people who are enthusiastic, say, oh, I love this, and then... you know, a month later go, yeah, but I don't want this $5 deducted from my checking account every month and cancel. So it's easy to kind of overestimate what you're making. A couple of the people I've talked to who are Patreon artists say, yeah, it's not as much as it sounds. On the other hand, it's a brilliant way of supporting. It was actually created by a guy who was a YouTube artist with a group Pamplemousse. And he realized it was very difficult as a YouTube artist to make enough money to support the group. So he created Patreon and it's done quite well. What are you thinking of doing on Patreon?
I've actually been working on Patreon for about a year.
Well, you probably know more about it than I do.
Yeah, but like I'm talking about it on the social networks I'm on, and I haven't really gotten any traction.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the sec. It's, you know, people always ask me, well, how do I get my podcast noticed? And this is like the second order of that, right? Not only now do you have to get it noticed, you have to get listeners, but you have to get them to give you money. And so mm-hmm. that, you know, that really, I think, comes from inspiring people, getting people passionate. Patreon has a number of categories: video and film, music, writing, comics. A lot of comic artists use Patreon.
Yeah, I put up drawings.
Yeah, drawings. Is that what you're doing? Are you doing a podcast? What are you doing?
I'm actually doing a couple of things. I have a podcast on YouTube, and I also have drawings that I
do
time lapses for the YouTube.
What can I search for?
On Patreon?
Yeah.
Luxbrush.
Luxbrush?
Yep.
All right.
That was a neat name, you know, a light painting with a brush because I draw on a computer.
Well, you know, and by the way, all of this is not incidental. Having a name that's easy to pronounce and easy to remember and easy to spell, you'd be amazed how many YouTubers have names that you cannot, you'd have to, you know, -_37, you know, capital B, lower, it's crazy. So Luxbrush is excellent. That's something you can, you know, understand clearly if you hear it quickly. And so it's important that people can find you. You got to use your social networks, but you got to use, you know, your existing fan base. Patreon works best if you already have a community, obviously, right?
Because
otherwise, you're doing
on my Tumblr, so
yeah, you're building a community at the same time as you're building patronage, and you know, it's hard to do both at the same mm-hmm. time. But you can, and I'm not saying you can't. What's worked for you? When do you notice? By the way, you can, and this is a good thing about Patreon. Observe when you get spikes, and you should. When do you notice spikes? What is it that works for you? Is it a Facebook posting? Does it work best? Or?
Yeah, so far I've started really being heavily posting on Facebook and stuff like that, and I'm getting spikes every once in a while from that, apparently.
Yeah.
So it's good to start generating traffic to my YouTube channel.
Yeah, you see, this is what you're doing. You're observing what works, and that's probably better than anything some radio guy is going to tell you, because it's all different, right? It's what tweaks your audience, what gets them excited about you. That's what you're most interested in. Well, LuxBrush, everybody should go check out what Richard's doing with LuxBrush and support him if you believe in it. That's another way to do this. Get on a radio show and say, hey, yeah, Here's what I'm doing.
The easiest way to do it is just go to patreon.com/LuxBrush, one word.
Good man. That's how you do it. You got to get the plugs in. But it's true. You know, this is true of everything, right? Promoting yourself. What's really great about the internet is everybody now has been given the tools they need to make their own videos and to get the word out and to create. But there's still that last link, which is to get the word out and let people know it and promote yourself. And not everybody's good at self-promotion. Not everybody's good at marketing. And if you're going to do it yourself, you don't have a marketing team behind you, then you have to get good at that too.
Yeah, it's been a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And I think people don't realize that. They underestimate the amount of real labor that goes into being a success on YouTube. You see PewDiePie and, you know, people like that making what looks like millions of dollars a year. But what you don't see is all the effort they put into it, the years of hard work, the promotional channels they use. And so I think a lot, it's like kids, you know, high school kids say, I want to be in the NBA. Yeah, good, great. But get ready to work your butt off, because it doesn't happen by chance, by luck. It happens because of hard work, and its promotion is very difficult. Not everybody's good at it. That's the real problem. You might be a great artist, but you know how Picasso became famous? Great art plus dogged determination, perseverance, and self-promotion. Takes all of that, and that's not changed. In fact, it's worse now because there's so many other people doing the same thing. Good luck, Richard. Good luck. LuxBrush. LuxBrush. We'll take a break for news at the top of the hour, then lots more to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. Not that.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
So you're going to put up the
clock. Oh, you like that, don't you?
I forgot. I really do.
Got to get your clock up there, yeah.
Got to get my clock up. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So piano player 88 Key said that he heard Leo tell me Red was almost up to 8K. Actually, I told him that I thought Red was almost up to 8K. But Linus from Linus Tech Tips already has an 8K Red camera. So I stand corrected. They already have an 8K camera. What's next? 16K? That's the question, isn't it? And I'm sure it will be. Or wider range HDR video to be more affordable. That's what he'd like. So would I. But getting back to the issue of the resolution of the human eye, I did look it up. Some people in the chat room were saying, wait a second, it's one arc minute, not one arc second. And they're right. It is. I misremembered. It's roughly one arc minute of angle that is the theoretical maximum. Now, there are other issues, though, as I said, and I was starting to talk about them. One is motion. If something's in motion, then, you know, that high resolution is kind of out the window, generally speaking. There's also the issue of how much contrast is there between the little tiny thing you're trying to resolve and what's around it. I mean, if it's, you know, if this is one shade of gray and then around it is a slightly different shade of gray, you might very well not be able to see it. So there's a contrast element to it as well. And you're right, piano player 88 Key, by the way, nice screen name, that, you know, 8K goes to 16K, goes to 32K. You know, when does it stop? There is a point at which, beyond which, you know, no human will be able to see it, even standing right up close. But then again, there's the numbers game. Everybody, all the companies want higher numbers. That's why they called Ultra HD 4K, even though it's not technically 4K. 4K is 4096 pixels across. UHD is 3840 pixels across. So a little bit of a difference. But 4096 across is the digital cinema standard. 3840 across is the home standard. But the companies still call it 4K because, hey, it's sexy and it's a bigger number.
Yeah, I have to correct myself because I had said that Dish didn't have 4K, but...
they do.
Yeah, they do. John Riopelle was in the studio and he said, we have it on our Hopper 3.
Yep.
But I wonder if it's Hopper. I wonder if it's really...
It's probably pretty highly compressed.
It's HEVC, which is that new high-quality standard.
It's the new high-quality standard. It's about roughly twice as efficient as H.264, which is its predecessor.
You're going to want to get the disc if you can, obviously.
Oh, yeah. The disc is going to be so much higher quality. Because even though it's 4K, it's coming from a satellite, and they want to maximize the amount of content that they can send, and so they're going to compress the you know what out of it as much as they can. I've heard stories of cable companies anyway, and I don't know if satellites do this or not, or even if this is really true. But what I heard was that they start cranking up the compression until their complaint calls reach a threshold, and once they get beyond a threshold of number of complaint calls because the compressed video looks so bad, then they crank it back down and that's where they leave it. So they try to compress the signal as much as possible. And even with HEVC, which is this new higher efficiency compression, it's still compressed. And so, you know, whereas they can get twice the efficiency, or in other words, use the same bandwidth with twice as much data, they're still going to compress it more and more and more as much as they possibly can. Whereas on disk, they don't have to. They've got a certain amount of storage capacity. And on an Ultra HD Blu-ray disk, it's 100 or 160 gigabytes, I believe. And so they just adjust it so that it fits in that space. And generally speaking, it's going to be compressed a lot less because they've got more room. They don't need to worry about bandwidth, streaming or broadcast bandwidth, and fitting other channels in there. So that's why the disc is going to be so much better. And why, you know, for those of us who care about quality, you know, physical media is still important. I know Leo often talks about the death of physical media, and perhaps someday that will be the case, but I don't think it's imminent. So those of you who have Blu-rays or Ultra HD Blu-ray players, discs are going to be around for a while. Will Ultra HD Blu-ray be the last physical format? Will we have an 8K disc at some point? I don't know. But it's all very interesting. Let's see here. I had another couple of questions here. Oh, Lumpy said, they say some people have a fourth cone color receptor and see more colors. I've heard that too. I don't know it for a fact. I'm working on getting actually an ophthalmologist on Home Theater Geeks to talk about these sorts of things. Exactly, you know, what the human visual system is doing with respect to when we're watching video. And so I'm working on that. So hang on for that. Hopefully we will. I will be able to do that. Asus 310, what 4K digital camera do you recommend? Well, you mean digital cinema camera, digital video camera, I assume. I mean, there are prosumer models now. Panasonic, Sony, probably JVC, maybe not. But certainly Panasonic and Sony, I know, have what are called prosumer models that shoot 4K. But for the professional, Reds are certainly very commonly used and really very good. Sony F65, F55, I think the 55 does 4K, but those are really expensive. If you're an amateur or a prosumer, as we call them, then you'll want to look at some of those other options. And I'm pretty sure Sony and Panasonic are the ones to look at there. let's see here. What else can I tell you about? Mike Heiss. Ultra HD 8K laser disc. Yeah, man. 12-inch laser disc. That would be one reason to go back to a larger disk format, I suppose, to be able to hold that much data. 8K, 16K. Nation, very good. I think the best bandwidth for music is 76 trombones. I could not agree more. Oh, the Gem Doctor, great point. If you want to find people with, quote, golden eyes, most diamond graders would qualify. You know, that's really interesting. I wonder if a diamond grader has a slightly better visual acuity. That might be, a genetic predisposition that would make somebody really good at that job. That's a really interesting idea. Anyway, I think we're just about out of time. Oh, okay, Hilo Pilot. I know Hilo Pilot. Hey, how you doing, man? More than 1.5 times the picture height. Extra resolution is wasted. Extra resolution beyond what? 1.5 would be HD. No, UHD. My mistake.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones. No April Fool's jokes today. Smartwatches, virtual reality headgear, that brand new clear Apple iPhone, all of that stuff. 8880. No, there's no clear Apple iPhone. Even though my friend Robert Scoble and I have a bet, he says that this year Apple's next iPhone, which will come out in if it's on schedule in September, or at least be announced in September, he says it's going to be all about augmented reality. You know what augmented reality is? That's where you're still seeing the world. The best example we have right now is Microsoft's HoloLens, which they're selling as a developer edition for $3,500. You put it on, it's like sunglasses. You still see the world around you, but superimposed, those sunglasses are actually screens, and superimposed on what you're seeing is other stuff. You know, a game, for instance, aliens coming at you. But you could also see, you know, if you're driving, it'd be like a heads-up display. You could see more information about the road. If you're walking around, you could see people's names and that kind of stuff. I think augmented reality is very exciting. And we do know that Apple's all in on augmented reality only because Tim Cook, their CEO, keeps saying it. We haven't seen anything. There's no new products and they haven't announced anything. But they apparently are hiring people and spending money on it. So my friend Robert says, this is the 10th anniversary iPhone. This is where it's going to all happen. And he says it's going to be clear. And I said, if they make a clear iPhone, I'm taking you to dinner at your favorite restaurant, no matter where in the world it is. He picked Paris. Oh, boy. I think I'm safe, though. I honestly don't think Apple's going to do a clear iPhone. We shall see. We have seen the other big phone of the year. You know, there are really two smartphone manufacturers at the high end that count. Now, there's lots at the low end, the $50 to $100 to $200. There are dozens of manufacturers, all making Android devices. But when you come to the phone, the flagship phones, the ones that show the most innovation, the most technology, there's really two companies that matter, Apple and Samsung. They dominate. In the U.S., it's almost 50-50. That's how much Samsung dominates. So we've been waiting with interest to see what Samsung was going to announce in their new phone, especially after the debacle that was the Note 7, the famous exploding phone that they spent billions of dollars to recall. I've heard that they're going to sell reconditioned Galaxy Note 7s for a very low cost, mostly in developing nations, where I guess they don't get a lot of news. I don't know. I loved my Note 7. I was very sad, but I handed it in, as I hope all of you did, because we didn't want it to blow up in our hands. Samsung says, no, we figured it all out. We not only know why the Note 7 blew up, but we have now taken steps. We have an 8-step process to make sure that these phones are safe. And you know what? I believe them. I think these will probably be the safest phones of all, right? Because of Samsung just not wanting to, you know, get in trouble again. They're going to X-ray the batteries and all this stuff just to make sure. In fact, they even, and they announced on Wednesday, they announced their new Samsung Galaxy, I'm kind of burying the lead here, is Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus. And I immediately ordered the phones. They were available for order on Friday from all the big carriers in the U.S. You do have to buy it through a carrier. They're not selling it in the U.S. unlocked. So you have to go to T-Mobile or Sprint or Verizon or AT&T and buy it. About $750 for the Samsung Galaxy S8. with a 5.8-inch screen. They also make the S8 Plus, the plus-size version, with a 6.2-inch screen, and that's $100 more. In both cases, they have 64 gigs of storage and a slot for an SD card. Thank you. So we can expand the storage. That's good. Same camera, it seems, as last year, that 12-megapixel, you know, rear-facing camera and the 8-megapixel selfie cam. That's the same. They say our software's improved, but, you know, I would expect that. It was a very good camera in the Note 7 and the S7, so I'm, you know, I'll be very happy with that. I don't think that's a problem. They've announced also that they're going to have a new smart assistant in these new Galaxy S8s. His name is Bixby, which is, a good name. And and Bixby has his own button, a Bixby button. Now, we weren't able to see Bixby at the event on Wednesday. Bixby won't be available until these phones ship April 21st. So I pre-ordered on Friday, but I won't get it till April 21st. I promise you, we'll be playing with Bixby on the show in 3 weeks. But the Bixby button is a neat idea, unless Bixby's dopey, in which case a number of people said, boy, if I'll pay some good money if I could remap that button to Google Assistant, which is... which is already exists, and we know it works, and it's good. Right now it's just for Bixby. We'll see. I'm sure some smart engineer can come up with a way to make that work with something else. There's the fingerprint. There's no home button. Samsung, like I think Apple's going to do this as well, they're going to abandon the physical home button, and there's good reason. It takes up a lot of space. And that's how Samsung is getting a giant screen, a 5.8 or 6.2-inch screen, in a phone that's not much bigger. In fact, I'd opted for the 6.2-inch because it's the same size phone as almost exactly as an Apple iPhone 7 Plus, which is about as big as I want to carry. You get more battery in that, and Samsung has been conservative in battery. They only put 3,000 milliamp hours in the little one, 3,500 milliamp hours in the big one. So I think partly they didn't want to try to – this was the problem with the Note, right? It jammed too much battery in too small a space. So I don't think they're going to do that again. We'll see if it's enough battery. Look, I wouldn't run out and get one unless, you know, you just have to have the latest, greatest thing. I would wait and read the reviews, and I'll have a review for you. As to battery life, camera quality – the people who held the phone on Wednesday and the people who had shown the phone early, like Dieter Bohn over at The Verge, were very impressed. Bohn said, this is the nicest phone I've ever seen. He says, beats the Apple iPhone 7, which is a gorgeous phone. He says, most beautiful phone ever. Black, silver, and orchid, which is kind of a purpley silver. In the U.S., they'll have other colors worldwide, but for us, black, silver, and orchid. You know, no stylus. It's not a Note. It's an S8. But this has been a very successful phone line for Samsung, and I expect it to continue. It would be interesting. Would you? I'm curious. You tell me. Would you be reluctant to buy a Samsung phone after the Note 7 problem? Will that keep you from buying a new one? Will people not buy it saying, I don't know? They might hesitate. They might say, let's wait and see if this one blows up before they buy it. I won't. I trust them. I understand how these things happen. Lithium-ion batteries are tricky, and I think that they've, you know, said all the right things about keeping this phone safe. So we'll see. I like the idea of a bezel-less, you know, front. And Apple's rumored to be doing the same thing. There's very little frame around the screen, so the phone has a giant screen, but it's not a giant phone because they don't waste any space. They've taken that physical home button, they put it on screen, as most other Android devices have an on-screen home button. And the fingerprint reader is now around the back next to the camera, which is a terrible place to put it because, of course, you're going to touch the camera half the time and smudge it all up. They better bundle it with a little cleaning cloth for the camera. Anything else new? I think that's it. You know, we're at the point now where it's hard to think of something exciting and new to put in a phone. We're at the point now where you just kind of do things like, oh, let's put yet another assistant in the phone because we can't think of anything else to make it special. The good news is that Samsung heard users saying, don't mess with Android so much. And apparently the Android interface, the Samsonizing of the Android interface, Samsungizing, has been minimal. So it's still it's still, you know, pretty clean Android. That's good. It also means updates will come faster. 3 weeks. Well, I'll give you my review and let you know what I think. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm curious what you think. Is how do you feel? Would you get a 6.2-inch phone? How about if it was the same size as the Apple iPhone 7 Plus? That's I like that size. It doesn't bother me. I like a big screen. It's my computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't like, I agree with the redundant apps. And of course, Bixby's the ultimate redundant app, but they always had S Voice too. Remember, that was redundant. What do you need another voice assistant for? Our show today, bro, I really like this. I'm really thrilled to have a new sponsor on the show. It's a product I've used for years, and I love it. In fact, as soon as they announced it, I ran out and got my free Square reader. Square, you know Square. You see it all the time. You go to a coffee shop. They have an iPad there, and you can swipe or tap your credit card and pay that way. Square has great hardware and software. It's reliable. It's easy to use. It's powerful. It's affordable. If you want to take credit cards, you can take payments anywhere, any way your customers want to pay, and you will never miss a sale. It is awesome. The new Square MagStripe reader plugs – actually, that's kind of the old one. It plugs into the headphone jack on your smartphone. So you can – that's for the old-fashioned swipe cards. But they've got a new Square reader, which is $49. It accepts chip and NFC payments. You can tap to pay. It's compatible with iOS and Android devices. It doesn't need – a headphone jack. It uses Bluetooth LE, so the new iPhones without the headphone jack, no problem at all. Then, or you slip your iPad into the Square stand, and you can have a complete point of sale. I just love these guys. And you know, for people who are using Square, it's a great deal. You accept every major credit card. The rates are predictable. There's one simple rate, 2.75% per swipe, dip, or tap. And if you're going to do a keyed-in transaction, that's 3.5% plus 15 cents. But they will also create custom packaging for businesses with annual revenues over $250,000 or an average ticket size over $15. So as you get bigger, you can negotiate better deals. No hidden fee. But I think that if you're a plumber and you're going and you can take the credit card right there and 2.75%, that's nothing. It's a great deal. There's no hidden fees, penalties, no commitments. You only pay for what you use. And fast transfers. They deposit your money with 1 or 2 business days. That's fast. And if you need, you can get on-demand deposits, just 1% of the total deposit amount. Square also has your back with up to, this is really good, $250 a month in free chargeback protection. So you have to worry about chargebacks. Check your sales on the Square dashboard. You can use PC or iOS. Lets you see historical and real-time sales data, track inventory, send marketing campaigns, create loyalty programs. It connects with all your favorite apps and services, QuickBooks, of course, and Weebly and BigCommerce. They also have their own API, which is people love, so it's easy to build your own solution. Square.com/tech guy to get free processing on your first $500 in sales. Squares.com/tech guy. Some terms apply. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number, techguylabs.com, the website. 8888-ASK-LEO, my phone number. Bill in Denver, Colorado is next. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you today?
I am great.
I thank you for your show. I always learn something listening.
Thank you.
I've dropped the TV on cable and gone to over-the-air antenna.
Excellent.
And I'm interested in a DVR for the over-the-air. I prefer no subscription, and I'd like the antenna feed to be separate location from the router. In my house, two-story, it's kind of hard to get them both together. I'm interested in what I just looking through the on the internet. You know, the Tableau two-tuner DVR turns up to a little under $200. And it's got a Wi-Fi, so I can have the unit separate. I can have it at the antenna income to the house and separate from the router. I was wondering what you thought about these things, if you had any other recommendations.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the Tableau stuff. I'll have to look at this. OTA DVR for cord cutters. Usually when this comes up, I send people, and mostly because I can't get OTA where we live. We're far enough away from the big city that we don't get over-the-air television, so I haven't been able to try these. But our chat room always says, oh, Channel Master, Channel Master, Channel Master. So certainly look at the Channel Master. And then Silicon Dust's HD Home Run. These are two DVRs designed for over-the-air television. And have a, I think if Wi-Fi is what you're looking for, the HD Home Run is probably a good way to go for you. That's SiliconDust.com. But the Tableau looks good. This is a newer product from a newer company. It's not what they're what we're doing here is not complicated. You need to have an antenna, obviously.
Right.
And then the antenna comes into the house and goes into the set-top box. And this is, I think, nowadays, set-top boxes aren't particularly difficult to do, especially since you can, if you want, use Android for the operating system. So, you know, Tableau looks fine. I don't see anything wrong with it. Let me ask anybody in the chat room know anything about the Tableau, T-A-B-L-O. It's TABLOTV.com. But as I said, they almost always say, oh, Channel Master. And lately, everybody's crazy about the Silicon Dust HD Home Run. Home Run is pretty sophisticated in the sense that you could use it with a Plex server, have your own content mixed in as if, you know, you're watching DVR stuff plus your own stuff. You know, I guess the big... Probably the big question would be, and I'm going to have to defer to the chat room on this one. They're my experts on this, is if you could take stuff that you had DVR'd and then save it, burn it to a DVD or put it on another hard drive. The problem with TiVos and, you know, the cable set-top boxes you get from your cable company, they all have copy protection on them. And so it's very limited what you can do. You know, you can record it, but you have to watch it on that device in most cases. But so what I think you would be looking for is something that didn't have any copy protection, would let you take it off the hard drive and then save it if you wanted to save it on another hard drive or on a DVD or whatever. And I'm not sure, and I don't know if the chat room has an answer for this either. But people seem to like the HD Home Run quite a bit. TiVo does also make, and TiVo's the class act in this, does make a over-the-air TiVo. I'm not sure if I want to recommend TiVo anymore. They got sold to a company called Rovi, and Rovi has said that they don't want to do any more hardware. So I'm a little nervous about TiVo. I love the TiVo software, and I have TiVos in every on every TV because I just really like how TiVo works. But I don't use it over the air. I use it with a cable subscription.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid subscription
services. Sure, absolutely. And by the way, I mean, you're making a good choice. Over the air is the highest quality you're going to get. Better quality than a satellite, better quality than cable. It's less compressed, so, and it's free. So it's the best deal in high-def television. The problem is, of course, that you know you then have to figure out, well, how am I going to get HBO and if you want these premium channels? And nowadays, that's not so difficult. HBO is selling direct, so is Showtime.
Yeah, I get by the time I have an internet service, and by the time I get the Apple TV or Amazon Prime subscription, I got more than stuff than I can watch.
Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of content. You're not really saving money because you know the cable companies wised up. And they made internet more and more expensive over time because they knew that's what was going to happen, is people were going to stop paying for the television subscription and try to get everything over the internet. So nowadays, given the, you know, the onesie twosie pricing for HBO Go and you know, HBO Now, I guess is what you'd get, and the internet, it's going to end up being very similar to your cable TV cost. But you got the pleasure of sticking it to the man. And I don't want to have anything to do with you anymore.
Oh, I don't know. When it started going north of $160,
I know it's outrageous.
I can do better.
I know. I agree with you. I completely agree with you. So you know, because it's all a la carte, you at least get to choose what you want, which cable companies never wanted you to do. So there's some other names to look at. I don't know enough about the Tableau. Apparently, nobody in the chat room does either, because nobody's had anything to say about it to know whether it's good or not. Are there reviews? Have you read reviews of it?
I read a few reviews on it, and I think the biggest problem that I could see is that it doesn't have
It doesn't have an HDMI or some kind of a video output, so to help you when you set it up. So you have to there's some kind of a workaround or something on it, but I have to do more investigation on that.
Okay. It does have HDMI. I'm looking on the back of it. It does have an HDMI port.
No, those are two, I believe.
That's USB.
USB port.
There's no. Well, how do you connect it to your TV?
Well, it's a wireless, so it's somehow sends TV to an Apple Direct.
Don't.
Apple TV Direct.
Don't do it.
Or to your router, and then your router sends
it. Yeah, don't do it. If you can avoid a wireless. And another problem with Tableau is there's a service fee, their monthly service charge. So I would say that's both of those are good reasons to take a look at ChannelMaster, which has no monthly service charge, and an HDMI port. You really don't want wireless for HDTV. It's just,
really?
Yeah, it's too easily disturbed. It can in ideal conditions it'll work, but I don't recommend. Why do that? Your thing is going to be next to your TV. Why not just use an HDMI cable? Right?
Yeah.
So I would look at the HD Home Run, which also has an HDMI port, and many of the wireless features that you're looking at. I would not ever want to use wireless instead of it. They're probably trying to save the HDMI license fees. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Well, I thought that would also help me. Though keep the unit away from the router, far away from the router, so I didn't have to worry about the having both the antenna feed and the
right. No, there are different frequencies. You don't have to worry about that. But if it's convenient to stay to not be near the internet, you know, maybe you know that's where you would want wireless, right?
Right.
But I have to say, my experience with a high def TV over wireless has always been mixed.
The power line? What about the power
That's line? Okay. It's not ideal, but it's okay. It does give you that advantage of, you know, using your power grid for Ethernet. But it's because there's interference, it's about half the speed. But I've been using power. I've used power line networking with some good results. There's also Mocha, which is using your cable from your cable leftover from your cable TV subscription. That works pretty well, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The problem with Mocha is you have to have a Mocha receiver on each end, and that ends up being a little bit more expensive. TiVos use Mocha, M-O-C-A, which is internet over your coax cable. And the advantage of that is that's got, you know, you're not going to have any interference. It's going to be high-quality data. So if you have, I presume you know, most houses have cable outlets everywhere you want a TV to be.
Yeah, mine's a little strange in that regard. I have the one cable that goes up to the second floor is got the internet service.
Right.
So now I would have a hard time piping.
Got it.
The TV line.
Is there a cable TV outlet next to that and one downstairs where you want it to be?
I've got some work to do on that, and I'm getting
power line is okay. It's gotten much better. And it does, you know, it's consistent, which is nice. As long as you're not, you know, you're all in one switch box. If you have more than one fuse box, then it can be a problem because it can't get over those. But if you're all in the same grid, power line works pretty well. It's about half the speed of Ethernet.
Okay.
Which is, if you know, adequate for HD TV, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Hey, good luck.
All right, thank you very much.
Have fun.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Tableau connects to your home network using Wi-Fi or Ethernet, but then it streams to the TV. Get an HDMI port. Why wouldn't you want an HDMI port? He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett. He's breathed the country air, man, and he joins us each and every week to talk about travel, using technology to travel better. Hello, Johnny Jett.
Hello, Leo.
You're back at home base.
I am. I was in New York for one night. It was a good trip. Actually, by the way, last week I mentioned this website called Snap Travel, and I did try them out like I told you I would.
Oh, yeah.
And I found a room for $148 at a four-star hotel.
In Manhattan?
Time Hotel.
What? That's awesome.
Which is good, yeah.
Very good.
The room was tiny. It was tiny.
Well, New York rooms are tiny. That's normal.
Well, this one was really tiny.
What hotel was that?
The Time.
T-I-M-E.
It's on 40, I think it was 49th.
Huh.
And 7th Avenue.
Nice location.
Yeah, it's great. Right across the street from where they play Chicago, the musical Chicago, and the Book of Mormon next door.
Yeah.
And
this is one of those new hipster hotels.
It's actually been around for a while.
Yeah. I stayed at the Hudson Uptown a little bit, And the room was only big enough to hold the bed, and you had about 6 inches to walk.
That's exactly this. That was the same.
Yeah. That's
but for one person it's great. Yeah. And it was $148. You can't beat that. They did try to upsell me when I got in there to a bigger room. I was like, I don't need it.
You know, Mr. Jed, you have this special room we reserve for Snap Travel. It's so small, can't walk around.
Yeah, and they said, well, I see you reserved it with hotel beds. I said, no, it was Snap Travel. But I guess they use hotel beds, which is the back end.
All right.
And so that was interesting.
Did they put their nose in the air when they said, I see you travel with hotel beds. Sorry.
I'm in the elevator shaft, so I could hear the elevator going up and down.
You got that bad room that they save.
But hey, $148.
It's a great price. It's a great price. Yeah, it's very expensive. New York is so expensive, especially this time of year. Everybody wants to be in New York in April.
Yep. Well,
so, Johnny, do you do April Fools?
I sure do. Yeah, I just put it on my – actually, I put a picture of my butt on my personal Facebook and told friends and family that I was going to be on a big-time reality TV show, and I'll be off the grid for 21 days. And I couldn't say – I couldn't disclose the name of the show.
It actually is, by the way, a very nice behind. but I, you know, when I saw that, I thought, Johnny, but you didn't post that publicly. That's the key.
No, no. Okay. I'm like, I'm not going to be on Naked and Afraid. Are you crazy?
That's what Lisa said. She said, there's no way he's leaving little Jackie Jet behind for 21 days.
I'm Naked and Afraid, the family edition. And
such,
I thought,
no. Such a devoted papa.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'll be in Dallas tomorrow speaking at the travel show.
Fun.
Travel and adventure show. So if anyone's around, come on by, say hi. And there's really good deals out there. Before I go into the apps and stuff, LA to Manchester, England, $450 round trip.
Wow. Round trip. What airline, do I have to fly on?
It's Cook. It's a low fare carrier.
Cook.
But these guys, I believe, let you check luggage for free.
Nice.
Up to 20 grams.
20 grams?
No, sorry, not grams. Sorry.
Kilograms.
Yes. Not grams.
I'm sorry, sir. That ounce is just a little heavy. Could you just shave a few off of there?
Okay. Also, United, New York or San Francisco to Peru. $462 round trip. Pretty good.
Wow.
And everyone just missed a deal from the West Coast to Japan. $328 round trip on Japan Airlines. But right now it's $527 on ANA.
ANA is a very nice airline.
Yeah, they have the Star Wars theme too, plane. I don't know if you've seen that.
No. I don't know if I want to fly on that. All right.
Flying. One of my travel tips, and I needed it this week in New York, because you'd never travel without earplugs or an eye mask or sometimes, the sound app or a sound machine. Excuse me. Because it's noisy and my room was. But there's a way you can find out in advance now. The Department of Transportation just came out with a new color-coded map.
Oh.
I tweeted it. I'll put it in the chat room right now. But it shows where aircraft and automobile noise is.
Oh.
And you can put in the location, type in the location. I copied you on the tweet, so you'll see it.
Yeah,
and
this is cool. No, I got it. Yeah, this is really cool.
And so, that's key. So if you're planning a vacation – and you want to make sure you're away from the flight paths or freeways. I mean, on Google Maps, you can look at the freeways, but you can't see the flight paths and what the aircraft noise is. So I would type in your address and see if it's accurate. If you hear planes or wherever, I just did it for mine and it was spot on.
Pretty noisy everywhere, except for like the Nevada, in the middle of the.
You can zoom in and there are different.
There are different neighborhoods. Yeah. All right. That's good. Yeah.
And if you're along the water, you have a much better chance. But although, I grew up in Connecticut and they changed the flight pattern and now the planes go over parts of Fairfield County.
So, yeah, you see if you're near an airport, you'll see these big X's where the planes are taking off from. That's really interesting. Yeah. Neat.
And if when you really drill down to zoom into the streets and stuff, you have to click on the – what's it called? The layers, and it will briefly show you the actual street address. It's kind of difficult
this
to see.
Is cool.
It.
Now it's you could probably just go to johnnyjet.com and see it, or follow him on Twitter at johnnyjet, or Google National Transportation Noise Map.
Yes,
that should help you find it because it's a long, weird address.
Chat room, and I tweeted it. Also, in the future, by the way, they're going to have rail and maritime.
That's
noise
really interesting. Wow,
I think that's a really handy tool for travelers.
Yeah.
And speaking of another handy one, this is full disclosure. I'm one of Allianz's travel ambassadors, but I'm also a policyholder. They have
my travel agent Jane always buys me travel insurance with Allianz. Always,
good.
Always, always.
Well, make sure you download their app. It's called Travel Smart. So they've updated it. So if you ever have a problem, you can now put in your claim that way. And it's much quicker and easier to file a claim. But what I love about it is that now it gives you a place where you can take photos of your prescriptions.
Oh.
And it's very key. One time I was traveling with my dad and he forgot his. But because I had a photo of it, a small pharmacy in France was able to fill it.
Nice.
But what I love about this is that they'll translate the name of it, because in different countries it's not the same name.
Right.
And they'll show you exactly what it is. So that's key, which you can't really find anywhere else, I don't think.
This is good. This is great. And this is a free app, right?
It's a free app.
And you don't have to be using Allianz to use the app.
No, you don't have to be that.
Nice.
It also has flight status, which you can get anywhere. But and also what I really like about it too is it has emergency numbers. So, you know, 911 is not universal.
Right.
In Australia, for example, it's 000.
Right.
So this is handy too. But the best part, I think, is having this, being able to translate the first aid terms and your prescriptions.
Love that.
Yes.
Allianz Travel Smart, one word.
Yes. I'll tweet that too. And I just tweeted it and put it in your copy due on it.
Now, that's a good point, because if you follow Johnny Jet on Twitter, there's stuff all week long. He's always putting useful travel tips up there, at Johnny Jet. And most of the stuff on your website's free, and most of the stuff's free, including those travel newsletters. So I don't know how he makes a living, folks, but take advantage of his generosity. JohnnyJet.com, at Johnny Jet. And then do you ever post anything on Instagram anymore, or is that
I don't. It's mostly photos of, you know, beautiful places. Lately, I've been putting some personal photos up there.
You have been really useful, because you've had travel Instagrammers of the week, and I've been able to follow a lot of other. There's great travel Instagrams out there.
They'll do that.
Yeah,
every week
a
different Instagrammer, and they're amazing people out there who give you inspiration on where to go.
Exactly.
And I'm getting ready to travel the world again with my son.
Are you? How old does Jack have to be before you hit the road?
There's people traveling within a couple of weeks, but I want to make sure Jack is nice and strong. And so he's going to be at least 8 months.
Good. He won't remember a thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, I traveled so much with Henry, even when he was 14. I still today, to this day, I'll say, Henry, well, you were in Russia. You remember that?
No.
Don't you remember the Berlin Wall? We were at Checkpoint Charlie?
No.
Henry, I've got the picture here of you posing in front of Checkpoint Charlie. He was 12. He doesn't remember it.
Well, my dad's 88, and he didn't remember I took him to the Bahamas once. And I was like, what?
Yeah. We pay attention to this stuff. But I have some very fun pictures of Henry in Berlin. And what he does is he says, well, I've been there. He tells his friends, I've been there. I don't remember it. but I've been there. It's pretty funny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Brian on the line from Montebello, California. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Doing fantastic.
Good.
So I was just able to buy my first home, and we're turning it into a fully integrated smart home.
Aren't you smart? Do that before you move in.
And, of course, we're using a Google Gnome, you know.
That's the April Fool's joke, the outside version of Google Home. What are you using?
Actually, the Google Home. We're going to be integrating that with the Harmony Remote and IFTTT to get everything done.
Perfect. I think the voice interface for home automation is a breakthrough. Once you can start saying things like turn on the kitchen lights or good night and it shuts down everything or lock the back door, that's the way to do it. You want it to be easy. Otherwise, this home automation doesn't make a lot of sense.
And we've been trying it out at my current rental place, and it's working perfectly and flawlessly.
Yay.
And so we're going to be integrating the whole thing into the house. Now, one of the things that we're doing is we're hiding the entire AV closet into another room so that all you see is just the TV and the remote.
Yes.
So that it's actually there.
Yes.
Now, to do this, I have to run a pretty long HDMI cable, and there are so many different ideas about how long that can be.
Yeah, you know, the longer the HDMI cable, the more trouble. I mean, you really, an HDMI cable, you don't really want it to be, in my opinion, longer than 3 meters, so which is about 10 feet. So if you're longer than that, then what you want to switch to is balun, an Ethernet with balun, BALUN. So a balun converts the HDMI into a signal that can be passed over an Ethernet cable, and it's basically an amplifier and a transmitter. So you buy an Ethernet cable with balun on each end that plug into the HDMI port, and you can go hundreds of feet. It eliminates the problem. And since you're going to have – are you opening up the walls?
Yes, we will be opening the
walls. So you're going to have the walls open anyway. This is a great solution. In fact, this is why when you do open up the walls, instead of saying, a lot of people say, well, what cable should I put in there? Put in conduit, a tube, so you can run different cables through it. In this case, you're going to have a dedicated Ethernet cable. It's not going to be part of your network, but a dedicated Ethernet cable for the TV signal. So you can find out, you can get the hardware at MonoPrice fairly cheaply. Ethernet balun, BALUN. It's short for balanced unbalanced. It used to be used as a converter between a balanced and unbalanced audio connection, but this is going to convert your HDMI into Ethernet,
and then that goes back to HDMI to the TV.
Yeah, you have one for each end. They're calling an HDMI extender using Cat 5e or Cat 6 cable, extend up to 98 feet, $17.99, and then of course the the Ethernet cable.
Fantastic, and that'll be good for 4K as well. I game
in
4K TV.
Yes, yeah. That's why you don't want to. You really don't want to make it. How long are you thinking the HDMI is?
Probably about 50 feet.
Yeah. You really don't want a 50-foot HDMI cable. I suppose you could buy one, but you'd be sorry. Yeah. HDMI extender, it's essentially is a balun. Balun really isn't the right term for it. It's what they used to call them. When I've used them, it's always been a balun. But, HDMI extender using – I'll tell you what. We'll put a link to this from MonoPrice into the show notes. $18 for both ends. That's a great way to do it. Very simple. And of course, they'll have the instructions there. 8888, ask Leo. Do you want me to, let's see, I think I'll take another call. I don't care what you want me to do. I'm going to take another call. I was going to ask Michael if I should pause, but you know what? Let's go to Oak in Casadero, California. That's what we're going to do. Hi, Oak.
Hey there, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just started listening to your show about 3 months ago, and now I find myself listening to most of your shows.
I am thrilled to hear it. Thank you. I'm glad you like it.
It's an awesome community that you've built up around you, and I think it's an amazing reflection of you. So,
well, I no longer can take credit because there's so many other people involved. We have lots of other hosts and a staff of 25, but there needs to be, I think, technology programming that is smart about it. Not, a lot of times mainstream just doesn't really understand technology very well.
Yes. Yeah. So my question is, since the House voted to repeal the broadband privacy regulation.
And the Senate now, too.
Yes.
Yes.
So can I hide my internet activity from my provider using a VPN?
Yes, that's exactly what you can do. I'm not sure I'm going to do that. I have Comcast at home. So here's what happened. This is, by the way, no different than it was prior to October of last year. That rule didn't go in effect until October of last year. And because there was nothing reining in internet service providers, we have lots of examples of the kinds of things they did. What reined them in was customer dissatisfaction. As soon as they were discovered, in many cases, they stopped. Verizon's famous for the super cookie that they put on everything you did with your Verizon smartphone. was identified by a unique identifier. And if a website wanted to know, well, who is that? They could go to Verizon and say, who is this number? And Verizon say, for a small fee, we'll be glad to tell you. Verizon, of course, had all your information as your internet service provider and your wireless carrier. So they were able to tell that person not only your name, but your age, your birth date, your home address, your, you know, credit cards and all of that. So that was a horrible violation. Verizon stopped doing it because they got caught. Not by the government, but by users. And a big stink was raised and Verizon ended up stopped doing it. But there wasn't a law against it until October. So we only had October, November, December, January, February, and March. We only had 6 months where our privacy was protected by the government. Competition will help, too. At work, my internet service provider, SonicNet, is an internet service provider that pledges never to do this.
Yeah, I just read that on their website.
They're awesome. Yeah. The problem is most people don't have a choice. You have one or maybe two internet service providers, high-speed internet service providers. Usually it's your cable company, your phone company, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to have a choice, then competition, I think, would help. And you'd go to the internet service provider that pledged to protect privacy, that said, we will never sell your information. Short of that, if you're with Verizon or Comcast or one of the big guys who will absolutely, I promise you, to do whatever they can to inject ads into your surfing, you know, your search results, to eject, to sell your information. This is a great revenue stream for them, and they will do it. They'll say they won't. They will do it unless, consumer hue and cry stops them. Mm-hmm. So a VPN is one solution. It's not a great solution because it really slows you down. There's an additional catch. So the way a VPN works is you scrambles your traffic coming from your computer all the way to a VPN server somewhere else. And then it emerges. It has to at some point emerge on the open internet because, unless you have a deal with every internet site you visit to scramble your data, you've got to unscramble it, right, so that you can visit these sites. So the problem is you're kicking the can down the road from your internet service provider to whoever your VPN service provider is. They're seeing all your traffic in the same way the ISP used to. So you have to trust the VPN. Now, there are lots of VPNs that are privacy-focused who say, we don't log any data, we don't log traffic, we never would sell your traffic, we don't even keep track of your traffic. That's who you'd want to pick. The other downside is it's going to slow you down.
Do you have any recommendations for VPN?
I use a number of them. Hotspot VPN is the one I use generally. I think they're a good group. It's at Wi-Fi Consulting out of Washington, D.C. But, we've had sponsors in the past. Tunnel Bear is very well known and I think very well trusted. You're going to want to kind of look around and find one. And the problem is I don't have the resources to verify that these guys really do what they say they're going to do. You kind of have to trust them.
Right.
And I think the bigger problem is it slows you down a lot. Mm-hmm. You're not going to want to watch Netflix through a VPN. In fact, you may not be able to watch Netflix through a VPN because VPNs are also widely used by people who want to circumvent geographical restrictions. So Netflix, of course, has license deals with all the movie companies in each country. And so Netflix UK has different movies than Netflix US. So UK Netflix subscribers might want to use Netflix America to see more movies, and they'll use a VPN to do that. They get the endpoint of the VPN in a different country. It looks like they're emerging onto the internet in the United States instead of the UK. So a lot of companies, including Netflix, block VPN traffic.
Uh-huh, and so did my bank account when I tried to get online.
Yeah, because it's often used for fraud. Mm-hmm. So I don't think VPN is actually a viable solution. It slows you down too much. It restricts too much of what you can do. And it just kicks the can on privacy down to a company that maybe you don't even know who they are. The good thing about having a big company like Comcast or Verizon is when they do mess up, people find out and they raise a hue and cry. And in several cases, many cases, this has stopped them from doing it, not the law. So I don't think it's yet time to panic. I really don't. But it is time to pay attention. And to let them know, you better not be selling my private data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So hold on a sec. The chat room's telling me that oneprivacysite.net has a VPN comparison chart that might be useful in figuring it out. But I think that the slowdown is going to bug you. And you're right. You can't bank. Now, the good news is that when you use Facebook or you use Google Search, your traffic is encrypted. Your Google Search traffic is not visible to your ISP. Because Google, in fact, this is now I'm starting to understand, Google wanted to put HTTPS everywhere. They've really pushed for that. Now you see why. Anything that is secure, SSL, HTTPS, TSL, those things are not visible to the ISP. It looks like gobbledygook to them. It's like a VPN.
Didn't I hear you say that maybe 10% of the websites use HTTPS?
Yeah, and more all the time because Google favors you in the search results. So, for instance, Twit now does. There's no reason to have secure HTTP to my podcast network except that Google favors it. And now there is a reason, because now your ISP can't see what you're doing at Twit. They could see you're going to Twit. They can't see what you're doing at Twit. They could see you're going to Google. They can't see your search. And actually, that's the biggest one, right, is the search. This is the one that is most valuable to them, your search history, because then they know what you're interested in.
Right.
Now, Google knows it, of course. And that's what one of the reasons Google encrypts is so only Google knows it.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Leo.
Yeah, great question. And I'm glad you found us. Keep listening. Yeah. Thanks, Oak.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, AV geekery, that kind of stuff. 888-ASK, Leo, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, you can Skype out and call that, but you need to call that number. We don't have a Skype in number here. It's just a Skype out to 8888-ASK-LEO. The website, very useful resource. You never have to write anything down. If I mention it, it's on the website. Thanks to James DeRuvo's writing it all down. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. And yeah, that's free. There's no sign up. There's no charge. I don't want you to pay for it. TechGuyLabs.com. We're talking about AV geekery. Richard's in the studio today, and he tells me that the latest way. So we had a caller who said, I have a long way to go. Should I use a long, maybe a 50-foot HDMI cable? I said, in general, that's a really bad idea. You should use, and I use a very old-fashioned term, a Balun and Ethernet. And Richard, who does this all the time, he's a AV. Were you on the AV squad in high school? Yeah, I bet you were. Yeah, I thought so. He does it for a church locally. He says the new thing is something called HD Base T. HD Base T. It looks very similar to the old HDMI extenders, where you have on one end an Ethernet cable and the other end an HDMI. And then you use Cat 6A is the best, because it's a nice thick cable, good for going in the walls, and it's shielded. So if it's near a power cord or whatever in your walls, which it will be probably, it won't get any interference there. To another HD, as in high def, base T, as in Tom, converter at the other end. And that's all they need, right? And is that an expensive solution, Richard? Is it?
A couple hundred bucks.
Okay. But then you can go for hundreds of feet, which is nice.
About 150.
150 feet, yeah.
One's a sender, one's a receiver.
You do need a sender and a receiver. Okay. There you have it. The latest in AV geekery. Dorothy is on the line from Durango, California. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. Actually, I called a couple weeks ago and had to hang up because I ran out of minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry to use up your minutes.
You used up my minutes.
I am so sorry.
Well, that's all right. That's the price you pay. Okay, I have a problem. It's causing me to go up the wall. This does not have a chip in it, but it did have a chip in it.
Yeah.
It's all those pictures you take and put in the closet and don't have to deal with it until you move.
Yeah.
I moved a year ago, and then I landed up in the hospital before I got everything started.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And my son unpacked for me, and it's a mess.
Oh, but you didn't lose him, did you?
No.
Oh, don't cry, because you still have your photos. But now you see why we want you to digitize them, right? To put them, to get them electronic so you can make copies and your son could have a copy and you could have a copy. I did this with my mom not so long ago. We had my dad and mom loved to take slides, right? They used Ektachrome. And so we had probably 40 or 50 slide carousels. Remember the, you'd have the slideshow, you'd get the projector. Actually, they had them in a box. I ended up putting, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, maybe a little more than that, put them in the carousels. And then so they were in her attic and we were fighting over who got to keep the carousels. I said, but mom, I have the projector. She said, but they're my photos, so I'm going to keep the carousels. I said, but mom, you can never see them, but I don't care. They're my photos. So finally, I got my sister to take them all down and get them scanned. And then mom got a DVD and I got a DVD and my sister got a DVD. And now everybody's happy because we all have the family photos and no more slideshows, but no more fighting over who gets custody.
So, yes, but we got 50 in our family.
50 people?
Yes.
That's a big family.
Yep, I had 7 brothers and 6 sisters.
Holy cow!
And about 30 little cousins.
Yikes, and they all want these pictures, don't they?
Well, my children did, and we took them all apart, and they picked out the ones they wanted.
Good.
And they got theirs. Yeah, but now everything's not organized or sorted out. Or
so organize. I can't help you with organizing the prints because...
Oh.
Well, what would I do? I mean, how could I do that?
I can send them to you.
But I can help you get them digitized. I can help you get them on the computer, which makes it... Well, here's the deal. I can help you in a way because once you get them on the computer... You can upload them to Google Photos, which is, I think, a great service. And by the way, think of that as a backup service because all the pictures that are on Google Photos now are saved by Google, can be shared with all 60 members of the family at no cost to you. No cost. You know, you could send everyone a link to your photos and they can see them all. But here's the best part. Google Photos, which is a free service, and I think it's free because Google wants to get better at machine recognition, will analyze your photos, and it's kind of remarkable. You could say, show me all the pictures of the family dog. Now, you can't say, I want Benji, but not Joey. You can, it doesn't know the difference between the dogs, but you can say all the dog pictures.
We don't do dogs. We do children.
You can do children as well. It does face recognition, and you can do face recognition by name, and it does a very good job of that. So you can say, I want to see all the pictures of Cousin Mary, and they'll all come up. You could say, I want to see all the pictures of Cousin Mary when she was in St. Louis visiting the St. Louis Arch, and they will all come up. They do this all with artificial intelligence.
Label me for why it's
no, you don't label them. It does it automatically.
Well, how does it know who's Cousin Mary?
Okay, that's a good question. So what you do is you say, I want you to recognize people, and you pick out a handful of pictures that are Cousin Mary. And then it will say, okay, I think this is Cousin Mary. And you say, no, that's Cousin Bob. You can, and it goes, oh. And you train it, but it doesn't take long. It takes just a few clicks. And then once it starts, Apple does this too on the Macintoshes, by the way. I mean, this isn't unique to Google, but Google does such a good job and they do it for free that once you teach it with a few pictures, it does a very good job of this. Now, sometimes you have to teach baby pictures versus adult pictures young adult, it will recognize from adult pictures. So it does a pretty good job. So the first step is going to get these prints scanned into the computer. You could do this yourself. You can go out and buy a photo scanner. Epson makes a really good one called the Fast Photo. They're a sponsor. And that Fast Photo is very quick. Generally, though, if you've got a lot of pictures, unless you have a lot of free time, I recommend sending it off to a service like Scan My Photos. There's quite a few of these that will, you send them a shoebox of photos and they send you back a DVD plus the shoebox. You don't lose the photos. So I think this is going to solve your problem of the photos all being thrown up in the air and disorganized. Get them all digitized. That also protects them, right? Now you can't lose them. I was worried you were going to say my son threw him out or something.
No, but he did throw out some things.
Well, you know how kids are.
Oh, I know, but he's 50.
He's paying you back because did you throw out his baseball cards when he moved out? Or his
no,
comic?
No, I sent him to him. I
oh, good. Sell. See, now, yeah, you he owes bosses. You. He owes you. You're a good
he owes
mom.
Me plenty because I moved out here from my big home
yeah.
to take care of the brand new little one.
Aren't you a sweet? He is. You know what? He does owe you plenty. That is a. When grandma comes out to help with the baby, that is a big deal. And to move. So that's the bottom line, Dorothea, is get these scanned. We'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com to a number of services that will do this. Once they're scanned, get them on your computer and upload them to Google Photos. That does that in the background automatically. And then they'll do all the categorization. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I don't know. Does that help you there, Dorothy?
Yes, it gave me direction.
It gave you direction. There's no need to worry. They do a frankly, nobody. You were lucky that you had your photos organized. Most people don't, right? I don't. But the fact is, you could say, "I want to see all the pictures from our trip to San Francisco in 1972," and it will do it.
Wow!
I know. It's pretty amazing. So Costco does this. You know, all the big big box stores will do this as well. In fact, that might be better.
It's a little tiny town. They don't have any Costco.
Yeah. So my mom was always nervous about mailing her photos. In fact, I haven't been able to get her to mail me the photos because she says, "But I don't want to mail them. What if they lose them?" So if you could find a service that's nearby, even in your little tiny town. I love Durango, by the way. I've been there.
Oh, have you?
Do you have a photo store still? Because a lot of photo stores will do this as well.
Well, I haven't looked for one yet. Yeah. I've only been here a year, but I'm still trying to adapt.
Where were you from originally?
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, a big city.
A big, overdeveloped, grown city.
Yeah.
Yes.
But Durango's beautiful. You're in a beautiful part of the country.
Well, it snowed yesterday.
Snow can be beautiful.
Snow can be beautiful.
not in March, but not
in
April.
3 hours.
yeah, my son's in Boulder for college, and so I go back and visit a lot. I like Colorado; it's pretty. But you're right; it does have a long winter.
Well, it's off and on. It's one day. The day before, it was 70.
I know. It's so weird.
Yep.
So weird. So, yeah, if you can get them scanned, and the real trick is to find a good company to do that. There's lots of them. Scan Cafe is very famous. With Scan Cafe is the one I had them send my mom a box. And you just, as many photos as you could fit in the box. They charge you by the box, not by the number of photos. And then you pack it up, and you send it off to them, and they pay the postage. ScanCafe.com. And then they'll send you back a DVD.
Oh, they do it, huh?
They do it all for you. Now, the next step is then you put it on your computer. Do you have a computer?
I do.
Yeah. You put it on your computer, and you have to go to Google Photos, photos.google.com, and they offer a photo uploader that just sits in the background and just – it might take a week. You don't care. It might take a while, but it will upload all those photos one by one. And then it starts the categorization. And then the nice thing is – your photos are private, but they're all at photos.google.com, and then you can share them with the whole family, so there's no more fighting. You know, everybody can have their copy of it.
Yep.
That's a really good solution. I was really glad I got my mom to send me the slides, because I have now, and I put them online as well, so that other family, you know, I can share them with other family members and stuff. Okay?
All right, thank you.
Cheer up, Dorothy. It's going to be okay. You're a good grandma. That's nice of you to come out there and be the grandma. My mom moved away when we had kids. Abby was about two. My mom was in Santa Cruz, and she said, "All right, I'm moving back to Rhode Island. See ya." They still have a very good relationship. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Time to talk high tech with Kathy in Laguna Niguel, California. Hi, Kathy.
Yes. Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
How are things up in NorCal?
Beautiful. Spring has sprung on this April Fool's Day.
It's awfully nice down here, too.
Oh, good. So. Oh, good.
We live in a beautiful state.
Yes, we do. We're very fortunate.
Yeah. Hey.
And we pay for and we pay the price for living here, I might add. We also live in a very expensive state, but that's another story.
Yes, we do.
Yep.
Hey, I have a question about I am a photo editor and digital scrapbooker.
Neat.
So it's kind of, you know, I'm following after Dorothy's call, but I'm a little further along than she is as far as organizing my photos. But anyway, I am in the market for a new laptop. I have a Lenovo, Idea Pad.
Yeah, those are nice, actually.
Yeah, it's okay, but it's coming up on 3 years old, and it's starting to do funny things.
The things about the Idea Pad, they were so inexpensive, which made them very attractive, but they don't last very long.
Yeah, and I've listened to you for years, and I know what you say about the life of a laptop, and I just have, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of work invested in my digital.
Good news, you're not going to lose any of it, but you do back it up, I hope, right?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, good.
I have the external hard drive, and I have Carbonite.
Oh, good. Glad to hear that. When you get the new computer, whatever kind of computer, you can always copy the old stuff onto the new one. That's not good.
Oh, yeah. No, I will.
Yeah.
But my question is, fellow digital scrapbookers are recommending that I try a gaming laptop. And so I've been looking at those, and I've decided on the 15.6-inch screen because the 17-inch is just too...
It's too big.
It's too big.
It's too big.
It won't fit in my backpack.
Yeah, that's giant.
And I need it to be portable when I go to scrapbooking workshops and things.
Oh, fun. Yeah. So that's the problem. With choosing a laptop is a question of deciding what's important to you because they're all compromises. You know, better battery life means more weight. Bigger screen means lower battery life. It's like that. So you have to decide what's a priority. So portability is a priority. Is battery life a priority?
Not so much.
Okay.
No, we can always plug in.
You're always plugged in. Okay.
My question, when on the websites, when they say memory, are they talking about RAM?
Typically, the way, you know, we geeks do it, memory is RAM and storage is hard drive.
Okay. Then my question is about storage because I've heard you talk about solid state drive and that's the drive that doesn't have any spinning parts.
Yeah. Highly recommended. I wouldn't buy a spinning drive to save my life anymore. Every laptop, every desktop, solid state.
What about these hybrids?
Recommend them. See, the problem with solid state is that they're more expensive per gigabyte. So a lot of storage is expensive. And so the hybrids are an attempt to solve this by having a small, relatively inexpensive SSD married via software to a large, inexpensive spinning drive and getting the best of both worlds, except you don't. It adds to the complexity, and they don't really change the speed much. The good news is SSD prices have fallen dramatically, so there's really no reason not to get a full SSD hard drive. You don't need a terabyte. Check and see how much data you use now. I imagine scrapbooks are data heavy.
Oh, yes. And if I, you know, as I do projects and things for clients, then I'm storing all of their junk.
So maybe you do need a terabyte. What you could do is...
My colleagues are recommending at least a terabyte.
Okay. Well, another way to go would be, because the operating system and all the apps will easily fit on a 256 gig hard drive. One other option would be to have a 256 gig internal hard drive and even a larger 2 or 3 or 4 terabyte external drive you carry along with it. And that for storage. But you certainly can get a terabyte SSD. And in fact, I often do because I like to have a lot of room.
Do you know if I can get...
But if you need more than that, if you need 3 terabytes, you maybe are going to be going hybrid. That might be the reason you need a hybrid.
Is there a 256 gigabyte SSD that is with the 15-inch screen, though?
Oh, sure. Lots of companies sell those. Now, which gaming laptops are you looking at? Alienware, Asus Republic of Gaming, or...
I've looked at Acer, Predator, Alienware,
okay.
Alienware 15, and Asus
ROGs. Yeah. Okay, ROGs. those are the big three. There are lots of other companies too that do gaming. The only the reason they're saying gaming is they tend to be higher end. They also tend to be more expensive, but mostly they put in higher end graphics cards. And I'm guessing, since you're talking to other scrapbookers, that this scrapbook software you use benefits from a higher end GPU.
Because you want when you change your graphics and change colors and things, you want it to respond quickly and so you can move on to the next.
Yeah, it's typically those. I don't know, what software do you use for scrapbooking?
I'm using something called Forever Artisan, and I use the Forever Historian photo editing software. It's similar to Photoshop, but not quite as hard to master.
So what you're trying to figure out is it GPU bound? Most programs use just the CPU, the Intel i5 or i7, to do even graphics work. Even Photoshop mostly uses the CPU, except for a few very complicated things like Gaussian blurs, where they benefit from using the GPU. I don't know.
Well, I want to find out if my software is GPU bound or CPU bound.
Call Forever Artisan and say, Forever, hey, do you use the GPU? And find out, because you might be buying something you never use.
Well, say they say it's the CPU bound.
Then you don't need a gaming laptop. Then you can just get a regular laptop and save $1,000.
Because
the real point of a gaming laptop is the graphics processor.
Yeah.
And the styling LED trim, which you don't care about. you pay a premium for that stuff. Because they kind of got you. They figure all gamers will pay anything, and they'll charge you more.
We're very stylish here.
Well, you may want it then. Those Alienwares are beautiful. You'll look like you're ready to play Call of Duty, but
we have to be the beautiful
scrapbooking. Scrapbooking, and the ROGs have the color keyboards that light up in different shades of color and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I would definitely go for the SSD. That makes the biggest speed performance of all. That is probably more important than even the GPU or CPU.
Okay. Let's see if I had one.
Hang on, I got to take a break, but we'll keep talking. Yeah. I'm not done. I like this. This is a good subject. Scrapbooking. What kind of processor do you need? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Another very good company lately is Corsair, Corsair. But you've got to make sure that you're not being, Kathy, that you're not being upsold because of the styling, right? So
yeah.
I think I would bet you Forever has pretty good support, right? If you could find somebody at Forever who knows, just say, is it CPU bound or GPU bound?
And
they'll let you know. Because frankly, if you don't have to get, the NVIDIA 1080M GPU in there, you'll save a ton of money. You'll get much better battery life. I would guess, and this is true even of Photoshop, that a fast processor CPU, like an i7 CPU, and a fast SSD hard drive would make much more difference than the graphics card. And all of this is understanding all of these terms. I'm glad you asked about storage versus memory, for instance. By the way, more memory is also important. I would make sure you have 16 gigs of RAM. You're doing lots of big, rich graphics. That's where you really want, in fact, if you get 32 gigs, you might even see better performance. You don't need more than 32 gigs of RAM, but at least 16 gigs.
Yeah, I think I looked for 32 gigs, and I had a hard time finding it with the smaller screen.
Yeah.
My other question about the smaller screen is it going to overheat?
No.
I've read...
No. A well-designed laptop, you're getting it from a big brand name, is not going to overheat.
Okay. What was my other question? Is it standard for most laptops now to have at least 3 USB ports?
It varies a lot. For instance, Apple has removed all USB ports from its Mac laptops. Now it's all Thunderbolt Type-C. And actually, going forward in the future, you probably do want that. That's a faster connection that's going to give you access to much faster hard drives and things like that. So
is it all my, like my scanner is USB?
Most people, what they'll do is they'll have a hub. So all you need really is one USB port going out to a hub, and get a powered hub, one that plugs into the wall, and then you can have 20 ports off of that thing.
Okay, so if I find a laptop that doesn't have the
all of them will have
I want.
Yeah, don't worry about that so much. You get a,
powered.
Yeah,
get a powered
hub, because your scanner's always you're not taking your scanner with you.
No.
So your scanner can be plugged into the hub, and when you get home, you you connect your laptop to the hub,
okay.
And then
perfect.
Yeah. Okay. I do that typically. I have a hub at home, and everything, the camera, card readers, the scanner, all that stuff's connected to the hub, because I don't want to carry that with me anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that way you just get home, you plug in one USB port to the hub, and now everything's connected. USB, every USB port can support 127 different devices. So the hub
Does that include, would that include like an SD card slot?
You absolutely can, you bet.
Okay.
So it could be a card reader plus additional USB ports.
Whatever.
Those are commonly called docks, docking stations, which will have lots more hubs. They'll have an Ethernet port. They'll have SD card readers. Yeah, if you shop around, you can find those things, all kinds of extra connectivity. Yeah.
Okay.
What's your budget?
Okay. I could go up to $2,000, you know.
I think you're going to get more bang for your buck if you just get, you know, you don't get a gaming machine, but you get a Dell. I mean, Alienware's made by Dell.
Yeah.
You're paying a premium because it's the Alienware brand. So you might, if you can, find out from Forever how much you need. I bet you don't need a GPU.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I, you know, my colleagues, they're all saying they love their gaming.
Of course they
laptops.
Do. Yeah, because they're pretty and they spend a lot of money on them. Hey, I got to run.
Yeah. Okay.
Take Thanks care.
You.
Thank you.
Bye.
Leo LaPorte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Spent some more time talking about scrapbooking. And it's funny, you know, we always think of, well, who really is the most demanding on a computer? Rocket scientists designing spaceships and, you know, architects using 3D CAD and movie makers doing computer gaming, you know, or character generated computer graphics and, you know, and no, it could be a scrapbook. Could be. If you think about it, scrapbooking, you want to be able to move images around in real time and arrange it. I think the biggest thing for a scrapbooker would be lots of RAM. Because if you can get the whole image, the whole page in memory, everything's going to be a lot faster. More important than almost anything else, I would guess. Then solid state drive. Then CPU, the Intel processor. And then maybe not, the graphics processor after all that. Dave in Orange County, California is next. Hi, Dave. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm over here in Anaheim, land of Disneyland.
Yeah, I love it. And Knott's Berry Farm. People always forget Knott's Berry Farm.
That's true. We like Knott's Berry Farm better. It's less crowded.
That's right. Nobody's there. It's fun.
Yeah.
I love Knott's Berry Farm. It's old time. That's like how amusement parks used to be.
Right. Yeah, it's fun. That's where Steve Martin got his start.
I know. I've talked to Steve about it. He was at that old, they've closed that theater down, but he was in, I can't remember the name of it, but the old theater up there. He used to do, you know, those reviews, those crazy reviews, you know, I'll pay the rent, you know,
right.
Snidely Whiplash and all of that. And he, yeah, he cut his teeth there. So what can I do for you?
Well, I have a young daughter who's at the age where she's begging for a cell phone.
Oh, yeah. How old?
She's going to be 10.
Wow. They start young now. Wow.
I know. And she could probably manipulate them better than I can.
Well, but I tell you, as a dad, there is an advantage, too, because now you can reach her. If she's stranded, right. She can call you. You know, once kids get cell phones, you realize the huge advantage as a parent to you. It's just that you also need to control it a little bit because they're very addictive devices.
Oh, of course. And then if we're concerned about, you know, what she's viewing and her security. And
yeah. Yeah, there's lots of thoughts, things to be thinking about. I remember getting my son when I think he was 13. He was in seventh grade, maybe. A kid's phone. And he was so insulted by it that he made sure it got washed almost immediately. I don't want this. I think it was a Firefly. I don't want this Firefly. I want a real phone.
Right. Well, we were thinking for her first one, maybe going with a smartwatch rather than a smartphone.
Problem with a smartwatch is almost all of them rely on the phone for most of their functionality. There's only a handful of smartwatches that have built-in phones and stuff. And unless your 10-year-old is ginormous, it's going to look ridiculous on her. They look ridiculous on grown men. They're gigantic. Because they have to have a lot of battery, and they have a GPS in there and a phone radio. So I like the idea, but maybe I guess she could carry it. You know, she could have it around her neck. She'd look like a rapper.
Well, we were concerned that, you know, if we bought her even an iPhone 5 or something, that she's going to lose it in a week.
Well, it's a big issue, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. This, your concerns are all, absolutely the case. The iPhone SE is a big bestseller because it's small. It'd be good size for a 10-year-old. It's the old iPhone 4 design almost. But it's got the more modern processor in it. $400, so it's less. It's half as expensive as an iPhone. It's still awfully expensive if she loses it.
Right.
I don't think a watch is going to give you the functionality you want. You're right. It's strapped to her wrist, so she's less likely to lose it. But just go look at the smart watches. They're 42 millimeters, and they're half an inch thick. It looks crazy on her.
Is this an unserved market, do you think? Or
yes.
No,
well, what people do is they a lot of kids get hand-me-down phones.
Right.
Because then it's not the worst case if you lose it. Another way to go is to get a used phone. And there are good places that recycle them, like Gazelle.com. They used to be a sponsor for a long time. They will, you know, check them before they resell them. But then there's also, and a lot of people are put off by not just the cost of the phone, but the cost of the service. Because now if you have a phone, you got to get a data plan. And, you're spending $50 a month. On a 10-year-old.
Yeah, well, it's all relative to peace of mind.
Welcome to the modern world. Welcome to the modern world. You know, this is kids have these expectations.
If we do go with the phone, do you suggest using a third party for the security or going with the
Well, the I think a 10-year-old, you probably could get her not a smartphone, but a what they call a feature phone, a dumb phone. And there you can get one for $50 and it's a phone. She can do some texting, you know, and it's a phone and it's what, you know, 10-year-olds had for a long time until the iPhone came out. So I think a regular phone so mom and dad can call is a great idea. And you can control the phone numbers that are in there. And I think that's probably a good start for a 10-year-old. By the time they get to 12 or 13, she's going to want to have music on it, and she's going to want a camera on it. And, you know.
Well, I'm sure you know. I mean, your children are older, but 10 years old these days is like, you know, 10 years
ago. Oh, man, I don't envy you. Oh, man. Yeah. So she wants all of this. She wants to be on Snapchat.
Oh, she already is.
Oh, my God. I don't know what to say then.
Yeah.
I'm finally too old. I would look at it, you know, maybe even an inexpensive Android phone. Something. Here's what I really like, the Motorola G4. They just came out with a G5, but the G4 is plenty. It's a good camera. It's a decent camera phone. It's $200 new. And I think that's more than adequate for what you want to do. And then the nice thing about Android as opposed to Apple, Android does have apps, parental control apps, apps that'll keep her from texting and things like that. Because Android is a little more open, so third-party apps can do more on the phone.
Right. Okay.
So don't get her an iPhone. Get her a cheap Android phone. I like the Moto G is a very nice phone, but you can get even cheaper than that. And she'll probably be happy about that.
One of the hand-me-downs is the Note 4 that we have just sitting in the drawer.
A 10-year-old, unless, again, that's a giant phone, but that's a perfectly good hand-me-down. Yeah, why not?
Right.
That's a great, and it's in a drawer, so you're not going to cry too much if she loses it.
Exactly.
You know, I think the Note 4, if she doesn't mind the size of the thing, is huge.
What about the replacement? Should I go with the carrier or go with the third party?
Well, the cheapest will be to go with your carrier and have a family plan, because then typically you can add a line for like $10.
For the service, but what about for insurance?
Oh, insurance. Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. You know, the problem with insurance is they're going to have deductibles and, I mean... I don't, you know, there's no good answer for this. You're giving the child an expensive device that can be broken so easily.
Right.
I think the best insurance is a really good case, like an OtterBox with a lid. and I've managed to keep my kids sometimes average 7 or 8 months with a phone without breaking it with an OtterBox.
What about with the losing it feature?
But Android has a Find My iPhone. You know, Android Device Manager does the same thing. You can find it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. You got a Note 4 lying around. I think that's a good choice if she doesn't mind the size. But you know, she's gonna be so excited to have a big girl phone. She'll go. Hey, I'll take it.
Well, you know, at this age, like we said, they're used to manipulating the latest iPhones and the latest Android phones.
And to give you some good news, you're preparing her for the future in a great way. I mean, her comfort level with computing is very important nowadays. So that's the bright side. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I mean, this opens a whole can of worms. You know, you've got to have a conversation with her about appropriate use. But I think you're going to face this anyway, so might as well get in there and get going, right?
Let me ask you another quick one. I have the Note 4, which I'm very happy with.
Love the Note 4.
And I'm waiting for the Note 8.
That's going to be this fall. I would look at the Samsung S8 Plus. Do you use the stylus?
I do.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Well, then you're stuck. You're going to have to wait till the Note 8 comes out. They are going to do a Note 8. But it won't be till probably this fall.
Right, around October, maybe.
Yeah. Well, that's when they usually do the notes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the note. I agree with you. I love the note. And then...
Yeah, I like it a lot.
You know, we're at the stage... So we have a 14-year-old. So we're at the stage where the next car we buy is going to be his car. it's a crazy thing that happens. You know, my 25 and 22-year-old was a lot easier. When they were 10, nobody had a smartphone. But it is a real convenience. By the time they were in middle school, I think, it's a real convenience to be able to, Mom, I need a ride, or, you know, it's just, and being able to text your kid is huge.
Huge.
Lisa texts Michael. He's in his bedroom. We're in our bedroom. Don't forget to brush your teeth. Go to bed. She texts him. It's awesome.
That's crazy.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. You're a good dad, Dave. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our show today, as often is the case, brought to you by these great guys at Quicken Loans. I'm really a fan of Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. And they love us geeks. They must. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage, a fully online mortgage solution. The whole mortgage approval process is online, and there's some real advantages to that. One, no more getting dressed and going into the bank, right? You don't have to go to a mortgage lender. In effect, they come to you through the internet. And a great mortgage lender, too. I mean, go look at the website, quickenloans.com/techguy, and see all those, you know, year after year, every single year since 2010, cut number one in customer satisfaction. There's a reason. They're really good. They're very technical. They are smart. And they've created this wonderful online solution. They call it Rocket Mortgage. So no more going to the bank. Paperwork, it's gone. You submit your pay stubs, the check statements, whatever it is that you need electronically, touch of a button. You can, and because it's online, you have complete flexibility to choose the term. you know, the length of the loan and the rate. You've customized it the way you want. And then best of all, this whole process takes minutes, not days, not weeks, not months, minutes. Last time Lisa and I bought our house, almost 4 years, be 4 years in September, it took us a month of between applying for the loan and getting the loan. A month. We practically lost the house. We kept saying, no, no, they're working on any. Not with Quicken Loans. Minutes. So you can actually go to an open house, say, let's buy this, go, and then show the realtor, we're approved. Check it out. QuickenLoans.com/TechGuy for Rocket Mortgage. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. For the geek in us all, we can do it online now with the best lender in the country. QuickenLoans.com/TechGuy. You better believe that's how we're buying our next house. QuickenLoans.com/TechGuy. I'm feeling glad. You know why? I got this guy. Dick DiBartolo, man's maddest writer, hits our GizWiz segment. Dick joins us each and every week to share a clever gizmo or gadget. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
I couldn't be better. Good. I am just, it's spring is here. You know, it's just a wonderful time of year. And I always like talking to you because you always have something cool or neat to tell us. Some gadget or gizmo you've discovered in your travels. What do you got for us today?
Well, you know, I have something. It's very funny. I was back on my old website and I came across a gadget. You and I thought, are these people crazy? It goes back 10 years ago.
10 years.
The company, 10 years ago, the company wow. is Digivina. I don't know if you remember this. And their concept was vinyl is coming back. And we thought, what are they, kidding?
Back then, we thought they were nuts.
Yeah. And so I was looking for things for my gadget warehouse for the GizWiz show. And I said, let me see if Digivina is even in business. And it turns out that they are and are becoming very successful.
That's
because
so funny.
Vinyl is back. So their feeling is, why not? Instead of just buying vinyl,
yeah.
make your own vinyl records.
What?
And this is great. It's a win-win thing. Make your own vinyl records by using all the old plastic bottles.
I
in
love
your
this
house.
Idea.
Yeah. So Leo, the problem was also when we first talked about it, it was $1,000.
Yeah.
So now they've got it down to $500. And
it looks kind of like one of those George Foreman grills.
In a way, it does. It does.
So it melts down the bottles.
Yes, and there's a blackening agent. So
it looks like a real record.
It looks like a real record. And then you can actually use it to record your own music onto your own vinyl record.
Does it include that too?
It includes that.
Well, see, that's actually a pretty good deal. So it creates the vinyl, and then it imports your MP3s and makes a record out of it.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. So you're gaining a record, you're losing bottles. $500 over, I figured it out, I think it's 87 years, it'll pay for itself.
Well, but I'm thinking you could also sell these records because there's a whole bunch of hipsters walking around with little goatees and tiny little glasses and infinity scarves who are looking for vinyl records. And you could say, hey,
you know what?
I got vinyl records here.
You could be the first podcast
on vinyl.
How cool would that be?
I love that idea.
How cool would that be? Yeah, if you want to check it out, it's digivina.com. Still in existence after 10 years.
And don't forget Dick's great website, gizwiz.biz, where you can find out more about Digivina and all the gadgets that Dick mentions on this great show. Maybe next week we could... We could do the Euro Club or something like that. Did you? Oh,
yeah, I don't know if they're in business or not.
Go to GizWiz, GizWiz.biz. There are real gadgets in there, too, believe it. And if you click on the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy, you'll get all the scoop on all of the stuff that Dick talks about on our show, including Digivinyl. Digivinyl. And while you're there, play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine by identifying... I still am puzzled by this, but I'm thinking I'm thinking maybe it's a love seat for people who don't like each other.
That's a really good answer.
A back-to-back love seat. Anyway, what is that gadget? If you can identify it, here's the deal. 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer, 24 for the cleverest wrong answer. So as with most of what Dick does, accuracy is not key. Gizwiz.biz, and don't forget his great podcast, The Weekly Gizwiz, at gizwiz.tv. Chad Johnson and Dick DiBartolo every week, and of course every week right here. Should we tell people?
I guess. Although when I was looking, there was a website where people were talking about it and saying, gee, this almost sounds too good to be true. And someone else said, I'd like to invest, but I'm not sure.
Didn't somebody pick this story up and when you first did it?
Yes,
it's like some stereophile magazine. Digivina is an April Fool's gag. I can't leave you hanging like this. There's no such thing. Dick just made a crazy website. Although, actually, if I were you, I'd make it. Thank you, Dickie D. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's see. I think we have time for one or two more calls. Let's try John in Missoula, Montana. Hey, John, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you for accepting my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for hanging on.
I have an older laptop. It's operating on the Windows Vista Home Premium. It can no longer do automatic updates.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Starting in I can't remember exactly the date, but this month, Microsoft is phasing Vista out.
Right.
No more support. So
my question is, as I'm considering purchasing of a new laptop, Acer, I understand is Gateway was acquired by Acer, and then Asus, and I understand they make their own internal components.
Asus is great. Both Acer and Asus are Taiwanese companies, and I think they make great hardware. Acer used to have a low-end line that I do not recommend. In fact, in general, whether it's Lenovo or HP, when you see the $200, $300 laptops, I don't recommend those. It's a foolish economy because they're not well-made. But Acer also has a high-end line. In fact, they've even said, we're going to phase out the low-end line. They realize they're not doing anybody a service. People say, I want a $200 computer. And they say, well, we can make it for you, but you don't really want that computer. So think $500, $600, $700 bucks. Acer is excellent at that price point. I used an Acer S7 for the longest time. Loved it. It was very thin, very light. Asus really does some great stuff. But I also like Dell. I like HP now. The new HP is really improved. Some of those HP Spectres are just fantastic. So there's some really good choices out there.
Okay, and the question I have is I want to be able to I don't do much financial work on it. I'm from the old school. I like to do it in person. But I like to look up information, and whatever information I do information – and then emails, you know, if there's something I want to copy or print off, I want to be able to connect it up with a printer. So that's primarily my basic use for a computer at this time.
So you might want to. I'm going to pitch this. You don't have to go for it. But you're using a very capable general purpose operating system to do a very limited number of things. And the problem with all that general purpose is it makes it more complex, less secure, less reliable. I would at least consider a Chromebook, because if what you're doing is surfing the net, doing email, you know, you don't need a general purpose computer. You need an internet computer, and the Chromebook is a very good choice for that. Super secure, more secure than any other platform out there. Very reliable, and now this is an example where you can get an excellent Chromebook for under $500, even $300. Dell, Asus, and Acer all make Chromebooks that are excellent. So I would take a look at those. At least consider them. Make me feel better. Consider them. But if you still say, I need to have Windows 10, all of those names are fine. You won't go wrong with any of them. Just expect to spend more for Windows. And remember, with Windows, the burden's on you to keep yourself safe and secure. And that is a bit of a burden. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening, everybody. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.